powered from the Perdomo Cigar Studios on the Red Stage in Indian Trail, North Carolina, and broadcasting from the HF Barcelona Studios in Euless, Texas. Welcome to Primetime Special Edition 71. Tonight, Mike Bellady of MLB Cigar Ventures returns as we talk MLB cigars, industry talk, and New England Patriots. And as always, Primetime Special Edition is sponsored by Perdomo Cigars. Awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand has consistently earned the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers: a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan Sungrown, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautifully bourbon barrel-aged wrappers with thick, high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with layers of rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigar is a family-owned and operated company located in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo Estate Selection Vintage, the Perdomo Double Aged 12-Year Vintage, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary, the Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Champagne, the Perdomo Habano Bourbon Barrel Age, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Aganorsa Leaf. Great leaf makes great cigars. Aganorsa Leaf stands out because of the distinctive flavor of our Corojo 99 and Criollo 98 seeds cultivated by Cuban agronomists on the best lands of Jalapa and Esteli, Nicaragua. When you smoke one of our JFR Lunatic, Guardian of the Farm, or Casa Fernandez cigars, you experience the unique taste and aroma that makes Aganorsa Leaf special. Smoke one today and enjoy the signature flavor of Aganorsa Leaf. And by Drew Estate. Check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes and Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And as always, all the live streaming for the primetime shows is sponsored by Drew Estate. Welcome, everyone. This is Primetime Special Edition number 71 for this Tuesday, March 31st, 2020. This is Will Cooper. I'm on the Red Stage in the Perdomo Cigar Studios, joined cross country by my friend and colleague in the HF Barcelona Studios in Euless, Texas, Bear Duplessis. Bear Duplessis.
Yes, sorry. Muted there. Wow.
I muted everybody. I had to do a little muting there. Bear. Yeah, I thought for a second we lost the stream.
I am well. Yes, I do have a voice now, apparently. So no, it's good to see you, Coop. I'm so excited to sit down and share a cigar with you and our guests tonight and everything. So I have a question. How badly are you missing baseball right now? I'm at the point where I'm like doing YouTube classic games and stuff, and I'm like, I don't even care about the teams. Like, I'm just like anything that pops up on the YouTube, I'll just watch it.
I'm missing it. Really in the next week or two is when hockey playoffs start. That's when I really get into the hockey playoffs. And I don't ignore baseball, but my focus goes on hockey at that point. And that's going to be tough not having those first round games every night for the next few weeks. So I know I'm going to feel it worse right now as far as that goes. So, I don't ever remember in my lifetime not having live sports. There was one live sporting event that went on though. The Alaskan Iditarod race was on.
Well,
they're still running it.
Yeah, they ran it. They ran it. They ran it and they had a winner. Wow. Yeah.
Awesome. Highest ratings ever this year.
Yeah.
Well, good for them. Well, I mean, I guess they are in isolation. I mean, you can't really.
I guess so. Really, I saw something come across ESPN announcing the winner. I can't say I saw it. I'm not gonna claim I saw it because that's simply not true. To not have opening. This was really been the opening weekend we would have had just past. So it is tough.
It's heartbreaking. My son's been asking like, Dad, can we go see a baseball game? I'm like, shit.
You know, I thought about maybe, and I'm just saying this, I'm winging this on the air. I haven't said this to anybody, but last night I was like thinking we could do a baseball show on baseball. There's a lot of things to talk about. Maybe we have an option to do that, you know, where we just talk baseball. Not necessarily the season, but baseball in general. Yeah. So that's something we can consider, because I don't know when we're going to have our show now. That's, you know, right. There's talk. I've heard some talk. They're talking about starting the season with empty stadiums, which that's going to really suck.
No kidding, man. So, I mean, my family and I have a baseball trip scheduled this year, but, like, you know, the good thing is we can move our flight and everything like that. But yeah, I was hoping not to.
It was San Diego, right? It was San Diego.
Yeah, it was San Diego this year. We're going to a Pods game.
Petco Park, yeah. No, so that's a shame, but hopefully it works out.
Yeah, we'll go later in the year. I mean, it's San Diego. It's not like this weather sucks at any point.
Yeah, no, that's good. Why don't we just kind of do our lead-in for our featured guest, and we can bring him right into the conversation.
Sounds good.
And our featured segment, as always, is sponsored by Cigar Marketplace. Cigar Marketplace is the first B2B premium cigar and accessories online broker that connects premium suppliers to retailers, simplifying the way our industry does business. Retailers can directly order from the suppliers they want without the wait, getting the customers the brands they demand. Wholesalers no longer depend on going store to store to find the retailer that fits their brand. It allows retailers to enjoy a one-stop shopping experience for all their store needs. With an optional monthly subscription of $39.95, members can benefit from full order-free shipping, 40% off second-day air rates, a 2% cash back on every 6 months. Refer a friend, set discount of 10% off naked bundles, and exclusive weekly deals. Non-members can also take advantage of Cigar Marketplace's exclusive deals, plus cheap shipping on orders over $750. Visit www.cigarmarketplace.co to learn more. Well, without further ado, we want to welcome in the president and founder of MLB Cigar Ventures, the one and only Mike Bellady. Mike, welcome back to Prime Time.
What's up, fellas? It's been a little while.
It's been 2 years, Mike. I couldn't believe it was 2 years. That's way too long. So that's on us, obviously. But it's hard to believe it was also 2 years as well. So
time flies, man.
Yeah, you know, we were actually trying. What happened is Bear and I are putting in some extra shows, and when I'm being totally honest, we said, "Hey, what's one of the guys we need to bring on?" And I think the first name that honestly came to both of us was your name. So it was that.
I appreciate that, guys.
Yeah, so I know we got you on a little bit of short notice, but we do thank you for joining.
It's not like I can be doing events someplace right now.
No, exactly.
Be hosting a virtual HERF, though. We'll get to that later.
Well, yeah. I have to tell you something. Those are actually fun. And let me tell you something, Coop. You guys at the Developing Palettes crew, and I mean, you guys, I didn't even know. I was tired, and I got off the HERF after about an hour or two. Right as the Royal Rumble was starting, I think.
When we went into Canadian trivia, that was basically what cooled everything down. But Mike, the funniest thing is we wanted to break the record, right? I wanted to break it the most, right? More than Aaron, right? But so we went 10 hours, right? We were pretty much ready to wind this thing down. And then Jose Blanco just pops up on here in the last hour. And
yeah, so I was not on when Jose got on that one. I was already off.
Yeah, it was like 3 a.m. Eastern. It was like 3 a.m. Eastern time when he came on.
Yeah, I was off. There's no question. I mean.
So he comes on, and he talks. He's great, right? And then he kind of – I don't know what happened. I think he drops, right? So we're ready to say, hey, let's wind this thing down like at 10 and a half hours. And Jose pops back up again, and we have him on for another half hour. So the show shut down at 4 a.m. Eastern time. And I was,
nuts.
That was long. And then someone said to me, hey, you guys doing another one? I said, that's up to Aaron, but I don't think we're doing 12 hours. I can tell you that.
I'll tell you what it was. All of these have been actually a lot of fun, believe it or not. I mean, it's, I'm going to send you a text, Coop, in a second, but, they've all been quite fun, frankly. I mean, it's I've been on several of them. I go on. I'll tell my wife I'm just going to go on quick for about an hour, you know, and then I'm on for 4 hours, right? And I get in trouble. You know, she's waiting to watch a show. She wants another show episode of Ozark, and you know, it creates some issues. So I try to take a couple nights off, and so I didn't go on any last night. But they're actually a lot of fun, and I don't think they're going to go away even when things get close to normal again.
No,
that
seems to be the trend. Like we were kind of joking around, Mike. We were using Zoom a year before anyone else.
Like, I love Zoom. Actually.
Yeah, we actually started. We went to Zoom about a year ago, maybe a little less than a year ago, And we found it like the easiest way, like to get people from the cigar industry connected, like, because it was so simple, right? And you know, some of these things can be complicated. And we, like, then Aaron and Bear integrated into their shows a couple months later. And we were like the only ones using it now. And like, we thought we had this like secret edge over everybody, right? That didn't last, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, now everyone knows what Zoom is. Frank, I've been using Zoom for a few years for business purposes, you know, around the world and doing conferences and stuff. And it's actually an awesome service.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's other ones like WebEx and there's all these other, but to me, Zoom's the best. But in full disclosure, I don't own any Zoom stock. I'm not promoting a stock, but I love Zoom. Actually, I had a big Zoom conference today, in fact.
Can you imagine if you had cigars? Mike, could you just for a second, off subject a little bit, you mentioned stock, but you know, in your former life, can you imagine having this technology back when you were doing that on a daily basis?
Well, you know what's funny is we were talking about this, not just that technology, but I mean, smartphones aren't that old, right? So when I got into the business, my first cell phone was held in a bag. You know, remember those bag?
Remember the bag phones? Dude, come on, man. I grew up on the Saved by Bell generation. I remember Zach Morris and his bag
phone.
Yeah, dude,
Saved by Bell was way advanced over the bag phone. I mean, the bag phone was absurd. And then I had a phone installed in my car with the antenna coming off the back window. And then, you know, and you could just make phone calls with them, right? That's it. You could receive a call. You could make a call. It was like $40 a month plus like $1.50 a minute, right? And your cell phone bill was astronomical. Now it's basically free to make phone calls on your cell phone. You're paying for data. But it's amazing what you can do. I mean, we're doing conferences regularly. So, Bear, you said in my former life, I actually never really fully left the finance industry. I mostly did. I've stayed involved here and there, and I'm still involved in some startup companies and things like that. I did some angel stuff and all that nonsense. But I have conference calls regularly. If you talk to Enrique Sayas, he'll tell you he can never reach me on the phone. So and it's because of all that. So I've been using Zoom for a long time, and it is an awesome, awesome thing. I watched Herklotz today. Actually, he's been doing his IG co-video chat co-videos thing.
Yeah.
And they've been great. I watched him today. It was awesome. And he's trying to actually break into on our conversation here. But he does a good job with it. I've watched you, Coop, do it. I've seen the Boston Jimmy do it. I've seen Abe Dabbedna did one the other night with Fred Rui. And it's actually pretty awesome. And I don't think it's going to go away when we get back to normal. I don't. I think it's going to continue.
No, totally agree. Totally agree. So why don't we do, Mike, why don't we just kind of start off? Like, I know a lot of folks know you, but there are a lot of our audience who might not know you. Tell us a little just how you kind of got to form MLB Cigar Ventures.
Yeah. So as Bear alluded to earlier, I basically spent my whole adult life on Wall Street and doing investment management, private portfolio management. I became a cigar lover. In fact, the way I smoked my very first cigar was when I got into the investment management industry, pretty much right out of college. I was working in the financial district of Boston, and I worked for a stockbroker who was a very senior stockbroker there for a little while as part of the training program. And he was a major cigar smoker, and he would hand me money, literally cash, every day and say, go down to the David P. Ehrlich store. They have cigars waiting for me, and there's enough money there for you to pick something up for yourself. So I had never smoked a premium cigar before. And this is, we're going back to like 1996. Okay. So a little while ago, like 24 years ago, right? So I would go down to the Ehrlich store. I had no idea what to pick to smoke. And I'll never forget it. He bought two brands of cigars. He bought Ashton Classic Churchills, and he bought an Avo. I forget which Avo it was, but he bought Avo. So I decided, I don't know better than him, I'm going to go ahead and buy myself an Ashton Classic Churchill. So I did that, and it was the first premium cigar I ever smoked, and it was kind of like immediately I loved smoking cigars. So I started smoking pretty regularly, and when I got off on my own investment management, I used to, every day, at my lunchtime, walk down to the Ehrlich store. I would sit down in this one particular chair. I would have a cigar and I'd smoke it. And then I'd go back to my office and finish my day. And that was sort of a habit I got into. And then I started smoking and more often. And I just love cigars. So I got to know a lot of people in the cigar industry. A lot of people that are in the industry might remember that Altadis had this program called the Altadis VIP program.
Yeah.
Where they would actually bring in who they considered to be cigar connoisseurs. And they'd say, please help us with test blends. We're going to send you some new blends to smoke. If you ever have a group over your house or you're gathering at all to smoke cigars, let us know. We'll send cigars for the event on us. And just make sure you take a group picture and send it to us. And then they would use it in marketing, right? So I became an Altadis VIP a while back. And then in 2011, the Tiant family approached me to invest in their company, which was called El Tiante Cigars. And Louis Tiant to this day is a guy that I love dearly. I consider him family. My kids still refer to him as Uncle Louis. And so I've got no issue with Louis, but my business partner was actually one of his kids who ended up not being a great business partner, and I had to dissolve that company in 2012. So I dissolved that company, started my own company, because by then I had enough contacts with retailers, tobacconists locally, especially in New England, that it just made sense for me to start my own company. And so I started MLB Cigar Ventures, blended a cigar with Manuel Quesada, which is the original Imperia Blue Label. Which is this guy right here.
Yep.
Right. So original Imperia Blue Label. I did that in 2000 and I started my company in 2013. I launched that cigar in 2014. I've created four other blends since, two more with Manuel Quesada and two additional blends with Ernesto Perez Carrillo. And I've done some sort of one-off store exclusives and some small batch stuff with Aganorsa. And PDR actually over the years as well. And I'm working on some really exciting stuff with Aganorsa going forward as well.
Mike, you know, right now, you know, as far as the production out of Quesada, you know, they've had, obviously the company's undergone a lot of changes. Has that affected you at all?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I like the way you put that. They've gone through some changes. To be honest with you, I don't know a lot of the intimate details. I know some of the details of the changes and what's going on over there. I love the Quesada family. Manuel will always be somebody that I also consider family, as I do with all of the Quesadas. And, Raquel and Patchy, and I love Hostos, who's now at Cigar Rings, and that's the company that makes my bands for my cigars. I have nothing but love for that family, and I certainly hope that all these changes end up to be positive changes, and they end up really benefiting from them.
How has it affected? I'm sorry, Coop. How has it affected though, Mike? I mean, have production numbers been affected? Obviously the quality hasn't. I at least speaking from personal experience, the quality hasn't really changed, but has that affect numbers or anything like that in production?
I would say that my top selling blends are the on the Ehrlich side. I don't know that that's because of the changes at Quesada or just because of the nature of a lot of the sort of publicity that certainly one of those two blends I do with Carrillo has gotten. Both have got all five of my blends have gotten a lot of rave reviews. But the two Ehrlich blends I have on the market especially have gotten really, really widespread following. And I'm not in every retail store for sure. The ones that those cigars are in, they move very well, which is why I'm kind of anxious to get those empty boxes that are sitting at the factory that I was telling you about filled once the Dominican reopens.
You know, PLM, Mike, I really think I don't want to say it was your breakthrough blend, but that was your big hit. I even told Jose Blanco this when he was at EP Carrillo. I said, that's the best San Andreas blend that Ernesto's ever put out. I mean, I'm going to say that straight out. That cigar was the best San Andreas blend that ever came out of that factory.
And you know what's funny about that blend? So So when I had El Teniente cigars, one of the premises I forced to happen when I took over at Halfback Company was we had to move production because to put it as, I don't want to come across as too direct, but the cigars they had on the market weren't really great. It's nice I can say. So I wanted to move the production to a more accomplished factory with more of a reputation. And we ended up blending two cigars with Don Pepin Garcia and Jaime Garcia at My Father's Cigars, which is unbelievable. Like a gringo from Boston gets into the cigar industry and his first two blends are done with Pepin, right? That's pretty unbelievable. And then when I made the break and closed down El Teniente Cigars, the company was actually called Tiant Cigar Group, but the brand was El Teniente. When I closed that company down and decided to start my own company, Manuel Quesada, who's also an inaugural member of the Cigar Aficionado Hall of Fame, blends a cigar for me and then ultimately blends two more cigars with me, right? When I first did the blends with Pepin, here's how that blending process went. I'm going to be perfectly honest for everyone that's listening. I said, I want a cigar that tastes like this. You know, and I gave them a description, right? And they came back and said, here's your blends. And they nailed it pretty quickly, which is unusual. But I didn't know enough at that time. And I'm not saying that I'm a tobacco genius now, but I certainly know a lot more now about the process of blending than I do, than I did then, right? So I, at first, and even the Imperial Blue Label, I had a little bit more input on that, but not a lot. I mean, I basically said, I want the cigar to be hit. You know, these are the characteristics I want. Manuel and Hostos Quesada, they put the blends together. We tested them and then we tweaked them and so forth. And we came up with the final blend that we released. Each blend subsequent to that, I've had a little bit more of a more input on. And the PLM, believe it or not, and I'm not saying this because it was my most successful blend. And I'm going to tell you how that process went in a second. But that's the blend that I had the most to do with. And the reason that is one, I was more comfortable by this. It's the seventh blend that I've done. So it's a little bit, it's like riding a bike, right? The first time you're a little wobbly. By the time you get on the seventh time, you can do a better job. You have more confidence. And that blending process took a while because I went to Ernesto and I said, look, here's my ideas. What do you think? I want it to taste like this. And I'm thinking if we use this tobacco combination, we're going to be great. And he said, well, let's try it. And he made me that and sent me some other ones that were different that he thought of that might hit those same notes. And they didn't work. They weren't terrible. They just didn't work. They weren't right. And we went back and forth four, five, six times. And finally, I said, you know, Ernesto, I think we're overthinking this. Let's take the original Ehrlich blend and just change the wrapper to a San Andres Maduro. And he said, okay, let's try it. So that was the year he wasn't at the trade show because his mother was very sick and she unfortunately ended up dying.
I remember that.
So he sent the bundles of samples for me to the trade show with the company. And they gave me the bundles at the trade show and I smoked it and I immediately called him and I said, we got something. Now we just need to tweak it a little bit. And all we really did was we tweaked the ratio of the filler tobaccos a little bit, not much. So it's really the same binder filler, slightly tweaked ratio in the filler tobaccos, and we changed the wrapper to San Andres Maduro, and the cigar's been a home run. I mean, it's been unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely. I know it's your first Maduro you really did with the brand too.
Mm-hmm. It's the first Maduro I've ever done.
I know I'm going to cause some anarchy in the chat because everybody's echoing Coop's sentiments, Buddy. But I got to, Mike. I got to tell you, I did like the PLM. I don't want to say anything here. I still think that the original Ehrlich is just lights out. The original Ehrlich for me was just an awesome cigar. I loved that blend. I love the way it smoked. And I thought it was actually better than the PLM. I'm probably the only person.
Well, that's the beauty of the cigar industry, right? I mean, I can't, there are great cigars out there, and I've said this a million times, but there are great cigars in the industry that are out on the market right now that I just hate. Doesn't mean they're bad cigars. It just means I don't like that particular flavor profile. And I liken it to, this is not a body that was built through a thyroid problem. I've eaten my way to this body, right? So So I mean, his belly, that maybe black is slimming, I don't know, but maybe it's not, but a camera adds pounds. But I'm pushing about 260 right now. So it's, I eat a lot. I love great food, but there are certain foods I just don't like. And liver is one of them. I've never had any liver dish that I've eaten and said, that's really good. I think it's just not my palate, right? So you could take me to the greatest chef in terms of making the greatest liver dish in the world, and chances are I'm not going to like it. That doesn't mean the dish is bad. It just means I don't like it, right? Same thing in cigars. So there are some tremendous cigars that have tremendous tobacco that I know the factories are doing the right thing, that they have great blenders and all, literally dotting every I, crossing every T, but it's just not my palate. So the great thing about the cigar industry is there's no right or wrong answer to which cigar is better. The only way answer that matters is which one you think is better. And I love the Ehrlich. I like all of my cigars a lot, but I love the Ehrlich and I love the PLM. I would tell you that depending on my mood, I prefer one over the other. Depending on what I'm eating or drinking, I prefer one over the other. Amazingly, even though there's only subtle changes to that cigar, they're completely different cigars. I mean, completely different. And one of the things I do pride myself on is all of my cigar blends are completely different from each other. There's no two that are alike. Yep. And I the next cigar blend I do is going to be a completely different blend. I don't want to be, and there's nothing wrong with this. There's a philosophy behind what I'm about to say I don't want to do. But I don't want to be one of these cigar makers that all of the cigars are, they're first cousins. They're all very closely related. They're just slight differences amongst them. I want them to all be distinct and stand on their own. And my goal is to have a cigar that hits every palate eventually.
That's the challenging goal, Mike. I mean, how far do you foresee yourself going to where you're not just reinventing the wheel or, for what we've heard a lot from a lot of cigar brand owners and makers for that matter is like, there gets to a point where you almost cannibalize yourself. So do you have a number in mind? Do you have a?
No, I mean, look, I don't ever want to be a massive company, frankly. I mean, I know I look older than this, but I'm going to be 48 in August, and I spent a lot of years on Wall Street. And there's a lot of mileage in this frame. So, it's like, I mean, you look at my hair, you might think I'm 60, right? Be nice. But anyway, so I'm literally going to be 48 in August, and I don't want to, I'm not going to build a portfolio of 40, 50, 60. But I'm not going to build the next Rocky Patel, right? And I don't want to. All I want to do is continue to have enough success with the blends I have now, be innovative, create new blends here and there that will allow me to expand the customer base that enjoys my cigars. And the way that I see doing that is to continue to work with other great factories, which is why I'm really excited to be working on some tremendous projects with Aganorsa.
Mike, just one comment on the Ehrlich I want to mention. That's a Sumatra wrapper though. And that's like Ernesto's, one of his, wrappers, that factory.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, to have it on that Ehrlich brand, and I agree, it's a sensational blend as well. And I think what's great is, like Bear said, it's something, you have something for everybody, which is good. You probably want everyone to have a favorite, different people have a favorite cigar in there. So I think that's actually a good thing, Bear, in a way,
Oh, no, absolutely. I wasn't like raising my fisticuffs about it.
No.
I was just, there comes a point where you where certain companies have run into this, and not necessarily massive companies. I mean, there are, fair sized businesses that run into that point where we've heard it on the show, even where people start to they start to cannibalize themselves. And so they have to be very conscious of it, which it sounds like Mike is. So, right. I mean,
it certainly
wasn't a criticism. I was just kind of wondering if there was like a magic number that Mike had in his head about it.
No, I think I'll just keep doing it until I've decided I don't want to do it anymore in terms of making new blends. Right. So, one of the things about, my background on Wall Street has helped me because I was a businessman first. And that's something I want to say this the right way. There's no two industries more polar opposite than Wall Street and the cigar industry.
Because everyone.
Okay. I don't know how else to say that. I mean, the cigar industry is like.
No one gave you hugs on Wall Street, Bellity? No one gave you a hug on Wall Street?
Not as many. And it's a lot more cutthroat. And I would say that a deadline actually is a deadline on Wall Street. Like that, the date you set a deadline for is actually a fucking deadline. I mean, you got to meet the deadline, right?
Yeah.
So in the cigar industry, a deadline is really merely a suggestion. It's like stop signs in Santiago, Dominican Republic. They're there. You don't really need to listen to them. No one really does. You know, it's kind of optional. And that's one of the frustrations I have in the industry is like, there's not a strict business approach to how we do things. And so that's been probably the biggest frustration I have in the industry. One of the two or three biggest, I should say. The industry overall is a great industry, else I wouldn't have stayed in it for as long as I have been in it. But I would say that, Wall Street is a very different animal from the cigar. Cigar is much more relaxed, which is maybe why I love it so much. Wall Street's not very relaxed at all, especially right now.
You're at a point, Mike, where it's 5 years into the company right now. So you've hit that a lot. You know, that's usually what I would say is a big crossroad for a lot of companies. Bear and I actually did a show on that. And we find when you hit the 5 year mark, that's like a crossroad in terms of now or never. You think you're at that crossroad right now? Do you feel like now you've gotten through the first 5 years and now the next 5 years, you know, you're ready to take that on?
Yes. I mean, I have some plans for the company for sure in terms of growing it. Growing my footprint within the retailer network around the country. Obviously, I think what's going on right now, what's going on right now economically is going to make that expansion of the footprint a little bit more challenging for a while, in my view. But one of the things I've always tried to do, even with retailers that don't do business with me yet, is when they make a post that says something like, you know, come on in for curbside service. I always try to share that post and say, hey, support your local tobacconist. It's really important. These guys, from other than the behemoths, and even the behemoths are feeling this, but I'm just saying that the mom and pop shops where, you know, they don't have a 2,000 square foot walk-in humidor and they're not doing all this online business and these guys are in jeopardy of going away. And we have to be cognizant of that. And I've always said I will never make a decision with my company that hurts a brick and mortar local retailer. So I've never, and I'm not saying I wouldn't sell a cigar to an online company or to a catalog house. I would under the right circumstances, but I've not done it yet. I've had opportunities to, but I just haven't done it because I am so adamant about the fact that the mom and pop brick and mortar tobacconists have been largely screwed by a lot of folks in our industry, by how these companies have sold them product for X price and then sold it in bulk a month later at a price that allows somebody else to sell it for less than the cost that the B&M paid for it. And I just won't do it. It's not going to happen. And so right now, I think as an industry, we have to support all of our local B&Ms more than ever. It's really, really important. Like when you tell me that Preston is shut down right now in Charlotte, that breaks my heart. I mean, I love those guys. And it's just sad what's going on right now.
Yeah, no, it is. And you know, like I said, I haven't been taking advantage of curbside for my personal reasons. But I've been asking every retailer to mail me stuff, and they've been very accommodating. Like I called up a couple of them, hey, just tell me if you got any humidor. Let me stock up on some stuff I need or may want to try. So, and they've all been very accommodating with that. So, I can say sometimes my local retailers drive me crazy, but this is real right now.
I love them all. I love them all, but they drive me crazy.
They drive, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so it's good. You mentioned the Agonarsa thing before, so this is you're starting to work with Agonarsa on a future project, then?
Yeah, so I don't want to get into too many details because it's still in its early stages.
Right.
I've done a couple of exclusives and small batch runs with them that have been very successful, which is not surprising because they have tremendous tobacco. It's another great factory. I mean, it's really, and I would say it's one of the hot factories in the industry, if not the hot factory in the industry, right? I mean, Terrence has done an amazing job with them. And Terrence and I go back a ways because when Quesada approached me to do my, to be my distributor. So a little history is they made my Imperia cigars and then they saw how my factory orders were growing in frequency and size. And ultimately they came to me and Terrence said, "Hey, have you ever thought about distribution?" And I said, "I'm open to anything. I'm a businessman. So if you have an opportunity for distribution that makes sense for me, yeah, let's do it." And we came to an agreement and we started distributing. And then like a month and a half later on because of some of the changes that you referenced earlier going on at Quesada, Terrence ended up parting ways with Quesada. So Terrence and I go back a ways. And he is one of the truly great guys in the industry. And is one of the truly great brand builders in the industry. There's very few people, if any, that I know of that have a better relationship with the retailers than Terrence Riley does.
Absolutely.
And it's an unbelievable thing because he's more of a gringo than I am. I mean, I don't even know how he pulls it off. And somehow he's related to Manuel Quesada. I don't know. Uncle Manuel, I mean,
but he said
I call
Uncle's
bullshit on that, but.
He says uncle's a kind of a
term of endearment. They're actually cousins.
Cousins, yeah.
Listen, I don't even know how that's. I don't even understand that. And it's been explained to me like 15 times.
Right.
So, anyways, so I love Terrence. When I wanted to do a small batch project for one of my top retailers, I said, you know, would you do it? He said, of course. And we did it and it was a big hit. And then we did a second one. It was another big hit. And so I said, you know, Terrence, we should work on some other things. And so we're doing that right now.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah. I'm excited about it. I'm telling you, we've got two blends actually pretty much done, that are not released yet. And when they're released, they're going to be awesome. I can tell you that right now. They're really, really awesome. I'm going to release my first Connecticut. It's really quite awesome.
Out of Aganorsa.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Okay.
I think they've done some good things with Connecticut. They're not known for it, but you know what they came out with the Aganorsa Connecticut. I mean, they knocked it out of the park with that cigar. So they can definitely do Connecticut.
Have you had an opportunity?
There's no question.
I apologize. If you had an opportunity to play around with or work with that proprietary blend leaf that they've been using since last year, the shade grown Corojo Maduro.
Unless Terrence slipped in a couple of those in a test blend that we were working on. That I wanted to do a Maduro and I sort of backed away from it because we weren't getting it right. And I said, let's just focus on these two. And then we got those two right. And now we're going to probably go back to a Maduro again. I would love to work with that. I want to go back to the Connecticut they did for me. I'm not a mild cigar smoker. I'm not one of these guys that likes a cigar that kicks you in the teeth. And is so strong that it, like, you take a puff and you're like, whoa, right? That's not for me either. I like cigars with a lot of flavor. And it's just, to me, a lot of the Connecticut cigars on the market are boring. They're like big cigarettes to me. And maybe that's my palate. Maybe it's not. There are some exceptions to that. The Connecticut that Aganorsa did with me is not boring. It's really, really, really good. Really good. And it's going to expand my portfolio a little bit wider than it is now, which I'm excited about.
That's great. We definitely look forward to that. And I assume I'm not going to ask you the name, but you're going to another brand. Is that really the plan you would do with that?
It'll be the Connecticut. The two blends that we have now are going to be under the Imperia brand, and probably the next blend I do, and it'll be under Imperium, and then we'll work on some more from there. You have to remember that David P. Ehrlich Company has been around since 1868. I have a lot of grandfathered blends at my disposal. I just haven't made them all yet. They've been sitting sort of dormant for years and years, and some have been around since the 1920s, 1930s, 1940s, and we've documented that. So I can come out with a lot of new blends without having to go through FDA, which is a huge, huge benefit, obviously. So I'm going to keep doing blends using those grandfathered blends and replicating those using great factories and making them awesome cigars for today.
That's awesome.
Hey, Mike, Kirk Kendall is in the chat right now, and he's wanting to know if you've ever tested or tried $100 bills for wrappers.
I love Kurt. I don't know why I love Kurt, but I do love Kurt. Ask him what a dick's for.
Oh, wow. Low blow, man.
No, he knows. You guys don't know that joke, but he knows what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
We'll take your word for it.
We'll take your word, yeah.
Yeah. I should have clarified that before I put that out on Facebook. But Kurt knows exactly what I'm saying.
Yep.
It's a pro cigar story from years ago. You know, I'll tell you what that is. You know what the joke? You know the joke. If I said to you, now you know, like the way I said it. But if I just out of the blue said, "Hey, Coop, what's a dick for?" You'd say, "I don't know what." what's a dick for? That's sort of how this story took off. And it's more than that. So it's not like a knock-knock joke story. I mean, but it took off. And actually, I wasn't there for the story. I've just heard it a million times.
Oh, okay. Well, like, yeah. I'm trying to read between. Okay, now I see.
Yeah, so.
All right. All right, let me get back.
Let's bring this back in. Let's reel it in now.
Yeah. All right. So
distribution. You're talking about how you originally were, being distributed, distributed by the Quesadas and everything, uh-huh. But actually, a couple of years ago, you formed your own distribution partnership with another mm-hmm. company that was being distributed by Quesada, which was of course Matilda, and so you and Enrique Cejas formed Sabel Distribution. Tell us a little bit more about how that decision came to be. Was it something that went wrong with that changed with the previous relationship, or was it, you know, something that you just felt that this was the next natural progression in business?
I think it was a little of both, right? So as I mentioned before, I love the Quesada family. I'm eternally grateful that they've decided to work with somebody they didn't really know at the time that they did to make three great blends. And then I'm grateful that they were my distributor for, it wasn't that long, a year. I don't even know. It's not quite a year. But you know, shortly after I started my distribution, agreement with them, they started going through a lot of the changes that you referenced earlier. And it was clear to me that the changes were not going to be great for the distribution side of things. In fact, when some of those changes happened, like initially I flew down to the Dominican Republic like the next week, and I sat down with them and I wanted to know what's going on. They were all very good talks, very cordial. I'm not complaining in any way, shape or form, but it became clear to me that what I envisioned when we came to the agreement to have them distribute for me and what was likely to take place were two different things. Additionally, Enrique and I got together and we're like, you know, we could probably do this on our own. You know, if we took our two brands and the level of sales that we have collectively, we could probably have our own warehouse and pay the sales reps and all the stuff that Quesada is doing for us. And it probably won't cost us more than what we're paying Quesada for distribution. And we would have more direct control and direct relationship with the retailers. So we talked about it for a while, and then it came to a point where we said, you know, we really should do this. And that's what we did. And Enrique's a great guy. who I had known for even for a while before I even joined Quesada's distribution. He was there. He had Quesada as a distributor before I did. In fact, my first trade show for MLB Cigars was in New Orleans in 2015. And I wasn't planning on going because I was too new. I didn't really want to distribute outside of New England yet because I was still knee deep in Wall Street and was too busy to travel around. And so I said, you know, I'm not going to do the trade show, but then Matilde signed a deal with Quesada like right before the trade show. So I knew that they had a booth and I knew they weren't getting a refund. So I went to them and I said, you know, I went to a guy named Ruben, who I don't know if you guys know Ruben Gonzalez, another great guy. Yep. One of the big distributors in the Dominican, tremendous guy. And I talked to him and he was involved and I said, well, listen, I'll take those booths off your hand because they had a good spot. And I decided last minute to go to New Orleans. And it was actually a great turning point for my company in terms of growing because I was able to get two new sales reps outside of New England, one in Atlanta, one in Texas. And that's how my company started to grow. So it was really a blessing that Matilde decided to do their distribution and therefore didn't need their booth because they were in Quesada's booth. I took that booth and I didn't do a lot of sales, frankly, at that trade show. But I set myself up for the future by getting in touch with a lot more, introducing my brand around the country and getting in touch with some brokers, sales reps that two of which in two of the biggest markets in the country decided to take my brand on.
Go ahead, Bear. I'll let you continue with Dylan.
Well, I was just curious as far as that was, as far as the Sable distribution relationship mm-hmm. that's kind of grown in the last couple of years. Do you do, so you mentioned that you guys share brokers. Do you also do a lot of, do you guys do a lot of events together?
We know we haven't. And part of that is because I'm busy doing events, but I'm also busy with my finance stuff because I've gotten myself somehow, I've agreed to help a lot of companies out. And so that's taken a lot of my time more than I probably planned when I started to do that. But so between my schedule and Enrique being in the Dominican, and Enrique has to go to Europe a lot, not a lot, but 2-3 times a year. And we've done a few events together. We just haven't done a lot. We were actually supposed to this week be in Honolulu, Hawaii doing the No Joke Smoke. I don't know if you know that event, but there's a event called the No Joke Smoke where they bring in, they've done it for, this would have been the 13th year. And clearly 13 is an unlucky number because they had to postpone it for obvious reasons. But they do a 3-day event and it's an amazing, amazing event with some great guys down there. And we were going to do that event together. We've done probably a half dozen events together over the couple of years that we've been distributing together. We should probably do more, but it just hasn't worked out that way.
You know, I was going to say, you know, you recognize the power of coming together with the two kind of like size companies coming under the mm-hmm. umbrella of a distribution company and everything. And the reason why I brought up this question, I guess we had the, and I know this subject came up the other night, is, you know, Coop and I had the good fortune a couple of years ago to be invited to your house at the trade show.
Awesome. I'm going to do that again this year if there's a trade show, which I don't think there will be, but if there is.
It was a fantastic affair. And what I noticed that night about the pair of you together is that you guys play really well off of each other. You guys are very, there's a lot of, you know, it's just the right amount of differences mm-hmm. and likenesses to where there's a really nice, you know, there's a really nice chemistry with between you two. And with the differences in your cigars, notwithstanding, I just thought that would be a really great opportunity for you guys. Cause that was something that I kind of observed. It was kind of an open-ended question. But you know, that you guys don't do a lot of events together. And I thought that would be something that was really good. Other than that, what are some of the other challenges? You mentioned a couple just a moment ago, but what are some of the challenges that you guys have faced, either together or just by you just realizing yourself distributing your own product? I mean, there's got to be a lot of problems that come, a lot of problems with the successes that come with that, right?
Yeah, I mean, whenever you start any new business, and self-distributing is a new business, right? We start a new company, and there's always unforeseen costs, unforeseen challenges, and you have to kind of adapt and overcome as those present themselves. From an industry standpoint, it's been great for our sales reps, because if a retailer has both of our products on their shelves, then what happens is, if they only need a small amount of Matilde, rather than wait to order Matilde, they can put a small amount of MLB in the same, and it ships in the same box, and the shipping cost is spread across more boxes, right? So that helped a lot. That said, I think there's an overriding challenge within the industry, and that is, and it's become more obvious and more, and a much stronger challenge since the FDA situation has become more and more prevalent. There are retailers that just don't want to bring on boutique brands that they don't have already. And I actually don't understand that, but I'll explain why in a second, but they're just reluctant to bring in new boutique brands. And so to try to get onto their shelves has become a more and more of a challenge. And we don't have the ability, because we're not huge companies, to, and I don't mean this literally, but buy our way onto their shelves through incredible deals and giving away the store and losing money on a few orders to get on the shelves. So that creates a challenge, right? Especially when we're two small companies and trying to compete with the behemoths. I've been pretty vocal about the FDA situation, without mentioning companies by name, and I never have, there are companies that want that to happen. There are companies that are absolutely, no matter what they tell you, they are in favor of that regulation, and they're welcoming it. It's a mistake, by the way, and it's going to hurt them eventually as well. But they want that to happen because that FDA regulation, or even the possibility that that regulation fully takes effect, means that they stop losing shelf space. And there are large companies out there that are losing shelf space, not significant shelf space to Mike Bellady, but significant shelf space to 30 Mike Bellady's or 40 Mike Bellady's, or Mike Bellady and Enrique Cejas and Akil from Regis, and you name it. All these small companies together, there is a boutique a cigar demand out there that's eating into their shelf space, and if they can get rid of us, that benefits them.
I totally am agreeing with you there, Mike, about how these companies that are in favor of it, no matter what they say, it's going to eventually come back to bite them too. It's going to, if they think the anti-tobacco lobby is going to leave them alone, then
There's a blueprint for this, right? There's a blueprint for this. So think about the cigarette companies, the very large cigarette companies, when the FDA came in and the government came in and said, we're going to regulate you. And they said, regulate, we can afford it. They'll go away. We'll have the market. Well, once that all happened, guess what happened? All these states sued them. And they had to settle several hundred billion dollar settlement happened. So the reason, and ironically, that is one of the reasons where we are as a cigar industry today, because they're paying user fees to the FDA now, and they're paying settlement costs, and they want to defer some of that cost to companies that had nothing to do with what they did. And that's us. You know, kids don't smoke my cigars. They don't, period. You know, they don't walk into a tobacconist and say, I want that $14 cigar that Coop is smoking right now. Or I want an $8 cigar even, or a $10 cigar. You know, they're smoking very inexpensive cigars. They're actually pulling most of the tobacco out of it and refilling it. And that's what they're doing. They're not smoking premium hand-rolled cigars, and we absolutely need to get that exemption. Now, as a in a perverse way, I think what's going on right now is going to mean that the FDA is absolutely going to go to the courts and say, please don't make us enforce this right now. Because people are dying, and we need to make sure that we get a vaccine for COVID-19 and other things. So anyways, go ahead, Bear.
Well, absolutely fair point. Just to go back to something that you mentioned just a moment ago about retailers not necessarily wanting to bring on new boutique blends, something that you said, something you didn't necessarily understand in some cases. I have a question here, and we just spent a great deal of time, and I know it's part of your story, and I'm not accusing you of this. I'm just saying this is something that I've seen very common with boutique brands is they are made in a lot of cases. There are a lot of brand owners out there like yourself who have cigars that are made by tremendous legendary figures. And again, we spent a number of times spent talking about it, and that's always been part of your story. That's always been part of your narrative. So I know that so I'm not accusing you of this, but I think what inherently is a lot, there's a lack of education when it comes to some brand owners sharing that information to retailers about like what's actually really behind the blend and everything. And obviously, so this isn't a question to you, Mike, because you don't do that. But do you think that that is something that you've kind of witnessed that, you know, you're trying to obviously separate yourself by having this as part of your narrative?
Yeah, I mean, I've always said one of my slogans that I've used since day one is develop by legends, smoke by connoisseurs. And I'm not calling myself a legend, obviously. I'm calling the people I work with legends, right? So, I think that whenever I can only tell you what I say to people when I meet with them, right? So if I were to go into your store, Bear, and I were to talk to you guys, and I would say, look, here's what I do. I work with the very best in the industry. I've only worked with amongst the folks that are amongst the very best that have ever made cigars. I can promise you this, that if you support my brand, I'm going to support you. That's going to happen. If you don't support my brand, there's not much I can do, you know, and because to be perfectly honest, I need the retailer's help because I'm not massive. I'm not a behemoth. And many times when I go into their humidor, the folks that frequent their stores regularly haven't had my cigars yet. If it's the first time I'm in their store, if it's a new account for me. So I really do rely on the local sales rep getting my cigars into the customer's hands. And I also rely on, frankly, the store owner, store manager, store employees to be able to say, hey, listen, I know you smoke this a lot. Just try this. It's really good. And I know that if enough people try my cigars, not everyone's going to like every one of my blends. But I have a blend for pretty much everybody. And if my cigars hit enough cigar smokers, enough of those cigar smokers are going to come back and try them again and put them into their rotation. And that's all I can really ask for. But I do require some help from the retailers because people aren't walking into a new territory or a new retailer where I've never been before and saying, hey, can I get Mike Bellady's cigar? I haven't seen Mike Bellady's cigar. You know, and this is my fault. I don't have a brand recognition that's that strong that way. But if people, I've always said, the retailers that support me, I will absolutely support them. And if I support a retailer who doesn't return that support to me, I don't forget it either. So I'm not, you know, this is my Wall Street background, right? It's like, listen, we can work together, but it is a partnership. I'm not a massive brand. I'm not Cohiba. I'm not, you know, people walk in, you know, tourists and people I'm not Perdomo. And I'm not saying that those are bad brands. Those are great brands. But I don't have their brand recognition, which is certainly I take responsibility for that. However, if I don't get the support of the retailer, there's not much I can do. So I need the retailer to help me. I will help them. We will work together, and together we'll make it work for both of us. And so that's a big challenge for a small, for any boutique brand really. But that's one of my biggest challenges that I've had is when I go to a territory and I visit stores, my cigars sell really well. And then if for some reason I can't go to that territory for 6 months, the sales drop off dramatically. But the simple fact of the matter is I'm one guy. I can't be everywhere. So when I'm not there, if I've already done all of the legwork to help you to give free goods to your customers and promote and, you know, do events for you, I would hope that when I leave there, you also return that favor and say, you know, this is a great cigar. Not every time. I'm not saying that everyone that walks through, you hand them my cigar. I'm saying where it's appropriate, every once in a while, just say, try an MLB cigar. And so that's a partnership that I try to forge with my retailers. With the retailers that do that with me, we do exceptionally well together. Really well. And I do almost anything for those retailers.
So, Mark, you and I have actually had this discussion, and I want to tread carefully here because I don't want to be demeaning or anything. But when it comes to marketing, you know, one of the because I know you've received some criticism for this, you know, for the people who are wanting to bring in new brands and everything, the Ehrlichan is an example. We have already established how tremendous both blends are. What a great cigar it is,
right?
But it's got a very classic look to it that.
Sure.
Isn't a classic brand. There are classic brands that have that classic look, but they've, like, as you mentioned, they've been around for a lot longer. So they have a little bit more recognition, you know, globally than say like the Ehrlich, for example, and everything. Has it ever been under consideration for you to possibly change that? I mean, I love the story. And when you told me the story, I kind of fell in love with it. So, I mean, you're talking to a history buff here. So, I mean, for me, it makes the cigar much better.
Listen, you're a Red Sox fan. There's nothing you can say to offend me. But anyway, so no, I haven't thought about it. The David P. Ehrlich Company has been around since 1868. It's the second oldest tobacconist in America. The only one older is Iron Reese in Chicago. So we've purposely said we're not going to change the logo a lot. We're going to keep it classic. So this is the logo here. That's the original logo from 1868, by the way. And that logo, the only thing we changed when we made the band is we took
pipe to cigar.
The guy had a pipe in his mouth and we made put a cigar in his mouth. Why? Because it's a cigar. And by the way, one of the things I'm going to be doing soon is we're re-releasing on a mass scale a pipe tobacco called DPE. What does DPE stand for? It stands for David P. Ehrlich. It's one of the oldest pipe tobaccos in the industry. It still is shipped all over the world, but a lot of retailers here in America don't know what it is or have stopped buying it in mass. So we're going to bring it back out. And on that logo, that guy is going to have a pipe in his mouth. That's a logo that's 152 years old. I'm not changing it.
That's awesome.
So no, I mean, it is a classic brand. And actually, out of all the logos, everyone remembers the guy with the top hat. That's what they say. The cigar with the guy with the top hat. I don't, you know, they don't, may not remember the name, but that logo resonates. It's very classic. It should be classic. We're going to keep that history in place. And you know, and I actually really love the logo. I think it's a great logo, but it's not something that I'm not going to modernize. It's too historic.
No, like I said, I love, and for that reason, when I was told the story for the first time, it kind of, like I said, it made me fall in love with it.
Yeah, I'm a fan of it. I'll be honest with you, Mike, because I'm into that old nostalgia and the history of that part. So. Yeah, I really like it, and I like the subtle change with the cigar. It's awesome.
Yeah, literally that's all we did, and we're working on a very special blend for the David P. Ehrlich portfolio that we did take that same logo and we made it a lot more glitzy. I've got the band done, I've got the design done, and it's to commemorate how long the cigar's been around, or company's been around, and they've been in the tobacco industry and all that stuff. So it will look more modern, but it's still a very it's still the same logo, just with a lot more modern sort of glitz and shine. if you will.
Very nice. You know, Mike, we kind of touched on the trade show a bit. Last year you were at the trade show. You and Enrique were both at the trade show. One thing you mentioned earlier on was, you know, you have a lot of these grandfather blends, but I've noticed you've never been pressured to rush out your blends or to kind of just for the sake of releasing the blend. And last year you went into the trade show with you didn't come out with anything new.
No.
Given, and always people say when you don't have anything at the trade show, it's disaster. But I guess given the trade show last year, was that a blessing in disguise? Like not coming out with anything, the way things went?
Sure, because if I came out with a new blend, I wish I could tell you that I actually thought that through and I knew that was going to be a blessing in disguise, but I don't. You know, here's the first thing. I have great respect for what the PCA is attempting to do and last year's IPCPR is attempting to do. I think they've faltered in a lot of ways. And I think they're losing the confidence of the industry. And that's why you see TPE starting to thrive in the way that they're thriving. I didn't want to do the trade show last year. I was, behind the scenes, I just didn't want to do it. I knew it was going to be a disastrous trade show. I knew it. It was very obvious to me. But I did it for reasons that we don't need to get into today. But I knew going in, I was not going to be happy with the trade show. That said, actually, my sales were pretty good last year. Okay. I mean, they were actually, I think last year was probably my third best trade show out of all the trade shows I've done. But here's been my criticism of the trade show just in general. There are very few companies that get significant sales that they would not have gotten had the trade show not existed. There's a lot of reasons for why that is the case. So even if I have a great trade show, it doesn't really matter. Those are sales I would have gotten anyway, for the most part. So when you take into account the cost of the trade show and what companies get in return, and I'm a small company, so that cost is significant. And I don't have an elaborate booth. You guys have seen my booth. It's not elaborate. And Enrique's is not. Our booth together is not very elaborate. It's certainly not one of the bigger booths there, and it's a nice booth, but it's not, we don't go over the top. And I didn't want to do the trade show last year. I'm not doing the trade show this year, although I might be doing the trade show now this year, if it happens. I'm not sure that might happen, but even if I don't have a booth at the trade show, I'm going to be doing the parties like Bear referred to earlier, where we had a chef and we made some great dinners and hung out and did all that stuff. Because I think this industry is all about connecting with the customer, and I can't connect with the customer in my booth as much as I'd like to. And the cost versus the benefit of doing that booth, it's just not worth it for a small company. And this is something where the PCA has sort of missed the boat, frankly, and made it so that companies like mine, if we're going to make a strict business decision, it just doesn't make sense. Now, I will always be a member of the PCA. I will give them, you know, their money, their dues, all that stuff, and so they can fight the good fight. But at the end of the day, when they make decisions where that led to what last year's trade show was, I have to say to myself, why would I do this again? Why would I let them make this decision to stick the trade show on these dates and it set us up for defeat, right? Now, there are companies that will say, no matter what, we're going to sell as many cigars as we make. I got it. I'm not that company. So if I'm going to run my business like a business rather than just fund it with my own money, I have to be cognizant of those costs. And my Wall Street background makes me very cognizant of costs versus benefit. So I knew going in last year it was not going to be a good trade show. It was obvious to me. It was a horrible trade show, even though they told us that the attendance was up. Let me say that again. They told us the attendance was up. Coop, you were there, right?
I was there. I got in trouble for using the word attendance versus foot traffic.
Bear, you were there, right?
Yes, sir.
Was the attendance up?
So I've made this point several times. So last year's trade show was actually my second trade show. And the first one I went to was at the Las Vegas Convention Center. This one was at the Sands, which is where most people have used to been seeing it and everything. I never experienced
for the Sands.
Right. And I never experienced that firsthand. So, and while the layout was very similar, I'm trying to be as fair as I can be on this subject. It did seem lighter in terms of body traffic and stuff and foot traffic and everything. But in fairness, I didn't exactly do measurements of the area and everything. I don't know if the area was larger, if it was like the way it was laid out and everything like that. People might be thinking I'm covering my own ass here. I'm really not. My experience just doesn't dictate that.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
So here's what I would tell you. I've done 8 trade shows. 8, and I will tell you that was by far the emptiest trade show I've ever seen. Now I want to tell you where my booth was. For Will, do you remember where my booth was?
Right next to one of the busiest booths.
I'm not just one of them. I had Aganorsa across from me.
Yep, that was what I was thinking.
Literally, right there. I had Fuente behind me.
That's right.
I had Padron to the left of me and had Espinosa to the left of me next to Padron. And there was nobody anywhere. I was literally turning to Enrique and go, I want you to look at Padron's booth. I go, do me a favor, walk around the corner and look into Fuente's booth. There's a lot of decisions that the IPCPR now PC has made. And I really do want to support them as much as I can, because I know they're trying to fight the good fight. I do. And I don't want to say that everything they do is wrong and all that stuff, but when it comes to running the trade show, they need somebody else to run that trade show, because they have, to make the decision to bring the trade show back to the Venetian or Sands, which is where most of us want it to be. That's important. However, you don't do it on 4th of July week, because in most of the country, that's a big deal. That's like one of their top sales weeks of the year. And most of these retailers are mom and pop shops. They don't have 14 employees that they can stick in the store. They have to be there. So they didn't show up. That's what happened.
Yeah.
And it was clear that's what was going to happen.
Yeah, Christmas Eve, Father's Day, 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, I could tell you.
Those are 3 massive ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, I can tell you, I've gone to 10 trade shows. That was the, I'm going to use the word foot traffic here. There was no doubt that was the least amount of foot traffic I ever saw at a trade show. If you saw my post-game coverage, if you saw my post-game coverage of the empty booths, believe me, I got.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
crushed for it.
Yeah.
I said that the PCA has contacted me numerous times saying, why do you keep saying that? I go, because it's true. I mean, look, it is. It was true. And then we're not even getting into the fiasco over Cigar Con. That was not well thought out at all. And it just shows that the people in charge of PCA are not, have not been planful about their decisions.
So Mike, go ahead, finish up. I'm sorry.
How do you come out with Cigar Con as a concept, and then you decide with no details of how it's going to work, and then you hold a meeting where you have a panel discussing what Cigar Con is, and nobody has real answers about how it's going to work, and then you a few weeks later say, you know what, we're going to put off Cigar Con. What is that? If I were running a company. If I ran my company and I told my retailers, I said, listen, we're going to do X. And the retailers say, well, have you thought about these 10 things? And I said, well, no, but I still think X is a good idea. And then they say, well, if you do X, we're not going to do business with you. And then I say, well, all right, I'm not going to do X. What do you think the retailer is going to think of me? They're going to think I don't know what the hell I'm doing. That's the problem.
Mike, so yeah, that's a, and it, I agree. I mean, we definitely, that was a, as bad an executed thing as I saw. I've been very open on it.
One of the worst things I've seen in all my business years. And yeah, I've seen a lot of crap.
Yeah, yeah, that would.
I mean,
yeah. No, no doubt. So
you
let
mean,
me.
You've seen fiascos on Wall Street. I can't. I'm calling bullshit.
There's fiascos every day, yeah. Even in the good times.
Right. So Mike, let me ask. Just based on all that knowledge, right? Does this trade show happen this year?
No.
You, well, not it, Mike Bellady. Do you think PCA actually tries to go through with this? Is my question.
No.
Okay.
Well, I think they're going to try to go through it because they need the money.
Right.
But it's not going to happen. They can't do it. It's not happening in July. What is it? July, whatever it is. It's not happening then. And so now you've got what you have a problem right now is in that if they want to postpone it, there may or may not be space available in the convention centers to do it later this year, because I don't know how companies are going to react and organizations are going to react to this whole thing. Someone might say, we're not doing any mass gatherings at all. Or they might say, we have to do our mass gatherings because that's how we make money. And so there's going to be a clamoring for very few dates later this year if they want to do it. So I don't know what that means for PCA. I think it's highly unlikely there's a trade show this year.
If the logistics were to go into place, Mike, Coop and I have talked about this. I think there's a real opportunity, not to make lemonade out of everything, but I think there's a real opportunity for the PCA to dress down the trade show and actually make a statement and make an impact at the same time on a smaller scale. If they could dress it down, make it a smaller trade show, smaller booths, very similar to the way that a lot of companies showcased at TPE, it would solve one of the most immediate concerns and most immediate complaints that you hear from brand owners and companies, which is the expenses. It would solve the logistics problem of finding a spot big enough in the with the problems that you mentioned about dates and everything. How would you feel about that if they came to you and said, "Hey, Mike, we've got this idea. We moved dates. We've postponed it to this date. We've actually found a venue, but it would require you as well as everyone else to be kind of on sort of an equal playing field with smaller booths." Do you think, would you be for that? Do you think that would be a positive thing?
Well, that would help companies like mine, because my booth is already a smaller booth, right? I mean, I don't have a 100 by 100 booth. I'm not Drew Estate or Perdomo. And again,
Drew Estate's not going, but okay.
Right. Well, they might under different circumstances, right? So, but I mean, I think Drew Estate for the last several years has had the largest booth space in the trade show, I think. If not, it's right up there. I mean, so yes, I would be welcome to that. But, and by the way, I think the way that's going to happen is they're going to be forced to do that, because companies, almost every company, even the really big companies, are shrinking their footprint at the PCA. Everyone I've talked to, everyone is shrinking their footprint. Nobody's getting bigger. So, and then part of the reason is, and this is, you know, and this is my Wall Street background coming into play. Part of this is how capitalism works. TPE came out and said, you know what? I think there's a void we could fill. We could get more cigar companies here. Let's offer our services to them. And then cigar companies started to see, well, it really doesn't cost that much. So let's go ahead and do TPE. And so they did TPE. And even though they had smaller booths, they did a lot of business, which told those cigar companies that it's not about the size of your booth. This isn't and I'm glad we're not on terrestrial radio right now. This isn't a big swing and dick contest. It doesn't matter if one company has a bigger booth than another company. If you do the right thing by your retailers, you have brand recognition. If Perdomo shrinks their booth by 20 or 30 or 40%, you know how much business they're going to write? The same as they would have written anyways, for the most part, unless the whole industry shrinks, right? So it's forcing PCA, I think, to think about how they do this. And I think the biggest mistake that they made was back when they were the RTDA, and they, made it so that you could get the show deals outside of the show, which, by the way, was driven by the largest companies in the industry. And they caved to them. That's a big problem. If you force,
I don't think it's ever going to be solved either.
No, it's over now.
I mean, TPE is doing the same thing happened to TPE. The same thing happened to TPE, in fairness, though. Yeah.
Well, it will, yes, for sure. But if you think about it, I mean, I listen, if I were at the PCA and I were running the PCA, and I couldn't tell the largest companies in the industry, you can't run these deals outside of our trade show.
Why not?
Because they're the ones that fund us.
Wait, why not?
Because those are the ones that fund them. That's where all the money comes from. So,
that's absolutely true. But
way, make up a lot of their boards. Typically, they make up a significant part of the board as well. So,
that point is absolutely true. That and money talks, right? That's always mm-hmm. the common thing.
It's like lobbying in politics.
But
it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. If somebody gives enough money, you're going to make it sound right.
100%. But my point has always been with this about the getting the deals outside of it is that, and this is something Coop and I have also said, that if that is one of the biggest driving points of why retailers aren't going, then they've got to self-correct there in something. And if they can't self-correct because of the money, as you mentioned, then there has to be some added value. And so what I think that the PCA needs to do is kind of take the temperature of their actual – of who they represent, which is their retailers. What would incline you to come? Like if you look, go around – because like you said, there are a lot of members who still support the PCA but don't attend. You were mm-hmm. planning on not attending, and now you're not a retailer, but that's just an example, right?
Right. So
there's a lot of support for the PCA, fighting the good fight and everything like that, but I'm just not going to attend. I'm not going to put an expense or anything. What would be the harm in taking a pulse from the people that you represent to say, what would incline you to get here? And let's just say for sake of argument that it is the deals. If you say the deals can only happen at the trade show, that is the number one reason that comes
out
of the survey.
That is a big deal.
Then why can't the PCA stand up and say, you know what? Look, we have to represent our interests. And if that means, which, I mean, already the big people have already left at this point. We've had four large companies not going.
They have now.
So exactly. So why can't the PCA now? This is the opportunity for the PCA to say, you know what? We're going to take that. We're going to take that and say, you know what? Deals only happen at the show, period.
Never
come
back.
I agree with you.
They should do that. Yeah, but it's never going to happen.
It's not going to happen. I agree with you, Will.
Yeah.
They should do it, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
So it's a lot like the what I said earlier about the whole FDA thing, where the largest companies, no matter what they tell you, they actually want the regulation, and it's misguided on their part, because once they get rid of us, the target is squarely on them. I guarantee you, I've seen it a million times in many industries. So. What the PCA really needs to think about is say, you know what, let's focus, let's not ignore the big guys, but we have to focus more on the small guys. We get the small guys matter too. The small and medium guys matter. Let's listen to them. So my attitude was when they decided to do CigarCon, which I knew was going to be a clusterfuck when they put it out there. It was very obvious from the minute they announced it, it was going to be a disaster. So when that happened, I sat back and I said, the first I'm hearing about this, and I'm a tiny company in the overall scheme of things, but the first I'm hearing about this is when they announce it in a press release that they're doing it. Not that they're thinking about doing it, but that they're doing it.
Well, it wasn't a press release. It was leaked. It was leaked.
Leaked first. That's correct.
Yeah.
It was absolutely correct. It was leaked first, and then they had to rush the press release out, right?
And then they were going to announce it. The whole plan was to announce it, but it was going to be this grand announcement. Yeah.
Right.
But can you imagine that they didn't even think of, we should talk to most of our members? We should send an email to every member of the PCA and say, what do you think about this concept? This is not a hard concept. Like, I'm thinking if anyone goes to like public relations or marketing 101 in college, the first thing they say is, if you're going to make a decision like this, email your members. Communicate with your members. Get some feedback. They didn't do any of that, which told me that only the very largest companies in the industry were driving that decision, which meant that it had nothing to do with me. So why would I support them?
That was a question I asked I asked your partner, I asked Enrique Cejas and a lot of other brand owners and manufacturers if they knew about this beforehand. And the answer was very simple.
No. It was no. The answer is no. We didn't know about it.
But, you know, the thing, Mike, and they didn't. And here was the other thing. The poll, I mean, I've been following this industry for 10 years. There is this concept of a consumer component has been the most controversial topic around the trade show for 10 years. They tried to do it a couple of times before,
sure,
and they had to look at the past history of this. And I don't understand. And I've been very critical of that. I don't think that was the right decision, knowing that this
horrible.
Was a lightning rod topic.
Yeah, boy, especially like it. Look, this just goes to my cigar industry, Wall Street, polar opposites, right? If I'm going to make a decision that changes in a very big way how something is run on Wall Street, you know what I do? I go to the people that it's going to most affect. And I say, hey, I'm thinking about this. I'd like your feedback. Tell me what you think. Give me some ideas. If you like it, how can I improve it? If you don't like it, how can I make you like it? If you don't like it and you're never going to like it, why are you never going to like it? Because I need to know before I make a massive announcement that I need to know that I'm not going to lose my base. So, and that I'm doing the right thing. That was out the window, which showed me as a guy who's been on Wall Street for 23 years, that they were so out of touch with how to run the organization that they just made a rash decision based on, I'm sure they had reasons. I'm sure there was like monetary reasons. I'm not sure they were like monetary reasons. They were monetary reasons. They thought it would bring more money in. So, but why wouldn't you at least come to us as a group, small, medium, and large, and get our feedback? Of course you should do that. That's a massive decision. And it was clear to me that the CigarCon thing would never work the way they were talking about doing it, even though they didn't say exactly how it was going to work. But it wasn't going to work. It was going to be a disaster. A disaster.
We saw it coming from the minute it happened. I think a lot of us saw it coming.
Of course.
Yeah.
It didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that was going to be a disaster. And then to see them say, we're doing this massive change and we're going to bring consumers in, to very shortly thereafter saying, wait, we're going to think about this. And then very shortly after that saying, we're not going to do this for now. What does that say? What message does that send to me? It tells me that the people making decisions don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. So why would I support, why would I send money and resources to that organization, even though I think that they're trying to help us in the long run? I think they're going to screw it up, so why would I send them money? That's why Drew Estate backed out. That's why, well, I don't know that that's why Drew Estate backed out. I suspect that's one of the reasons Drew Estate backed out and several other large companies.
Right. So, no, I would agree with you on that, Mike. I mean, there was, you know, it was more than just, I think there were bigger issues, but beyond that, but there were bigger issues. You know, because I think the questions are, you know, what PCA was doing for those companies and stuff like that. And we'll see what happens with that. Obviously they're not going to be, I mean, you kind of look at it right now. They may have made the best call in case they actually do have this trade show. So we'll see.
Look, I hope that the PCA is a thriving, very well-run organization. I do. I hope they figure it out. But to me, as a businessman, I looked at what's happened in the time I've been in the industry, and it got to a point last year where leading up to the trade show, I'm like, it's going to be a disaster. This trade show is going to be a disaster. Now, I will say this about the trade show. I did okay sales-wise, as I said earlier, but so I would say that the feet that walked into my booth were there for a reason. Right? There was no tire kickers. They were ready to do business, which is that is a positive, because there's a lot of tire kickers at the trade show yearly. But I would say that they should really consult with us, the members, as much as they can.
I totally agree. I mean, definitely, I agree with that. And that did not happen.
And I don't care if they agree with us on everything. I just think I just want them to listen. Just listen to us. Let us have some input.
Yep. So that's fair. I think that's fair. I mean, they were trying these focus groups or these committees, but I think everything now got reprioritized with just other things going on right now. So I think CigarCon. I mean, Scott told us CigarCon's dead. I mean, he told us that on.
Well, Gottlieb did.
No,
Pierce. Gottlieb's the FDA guy.
The former
FDA guy.
Former FDA.
Yeah, exactly.
They all blend together. Their name's Scott. Yeah. I'm worried about my company. Scott Pierce, who, by the way, is a good guy.
He's a great guy.
He is.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
And Scott probably doesn't know me from a hole in the wall. But I've met him a couple times. He's a great guy. I think he wants to do the right thing. I just think the organization overall needs revamping. There's something going on there that's not working.
Wait, sorry. This may seem like a minute detail. I'm sorry. You said you've only met the director of PCA, who you're a member of and have been to 8 trade shows, and you've only met the executive director twice?
Yeah, but I'm tiny. I mean, I don't know if it was twice. It might have been one time. It might have been 4 times. But look, I promise you this. If you walked up to Scott Gottlieb and said, "Do you know who Mike Bellady is?" He doesn't know who I am. I guarantee you. And by the way, I'm not saying he should know who I am. I'm just saying that I haven't had any meaningful discussions. And I don't know anyone that has a company of my size that's had any meaningful input to the PCA. And that's a problem.
Have you had any meaning in your 8 years of going and participating in the trade show? Have you ever had that audience with anyone on the board or anyone with?
Well, I mean, I've known people on the board, but not because they were on the board. I've known them because I've known them. Right. So Dave Garofalo used to be on the board, but he owns 2 Guys Smoke Shop in New Hampshire. I'm in Massachusetts. I know him not because he was on the board, but I know him and I don't want to speak for Dave, but I think there's a reason why Dave's not on the board anymore. I know Abe from Smoke In very well. He was on the board. Abe's a very good friend of mine who from before I was in the industry. I don't want to speak for Abe, but I know that I think there's probably a reason why he's not involved with the PCA anymore. And so when you have guys like Abe and Dave who are, if I were starting a tobacconist tomorrow, I'd want to sit down with them for as much time as they want to give me. Right. So these are 2 of the most successful retailers in the industry. And they both made the decision that they're not going to support PCA anymore. If I'm running PCA, I'm going, okay, we should probably figure out why that happened. Because that's a problem.
I totally agree. I totally agree. When you're losing some of your
beer. On Wall Street, if I have 100 clients and I'm managing however much money in total I'm managing, but 2 of my 5 top clients say, "We're firing you," I'm going to go, "Oh, shit." I got to know why that is. So they may still fire me, but I'm going to say, even if after they fire me, I'm going to say, "Why'd you fire me? Please tell me why you fired me. I want to know." Right? I'm not, maybe that happened with the PCA. I don't know. But I'm going to tell you that when you see people like Abe and Dave Garofalo leave PCA, that's a problem. And there's more, by the way. I just those are two that I know very well personally. So I don't mean to pick them out, and maybe they don't even like that I've mentioned their names, but and hopefully they're not upset with me. But that's a huge red flag, and the PCA needs to figure that out. Why are companies like that saying we're not coming back anymore?
That's a fair point. Very fair point. All right, Mike, I got one more, like, kind of, I'd say, serious question, right? And then we can have a
serious.
Fun. Yeah.
Is this serious meaning Red Sox or Patriots related?
No,
or
the Patriots. The
about?
Patriots is after this.
No, that's extra serious, and that's next. This is just serious.
All right. Mm. So I want to kind of phrase the question, and I'm coming at you from Switzerland. Okay. So you've been very, very well known for your political opinion. There's no secret about that, and I'm not judging one way or another. Okay.
Yeah.
I think everyone has a right to express themselves, but here's my question to you.
I agree.
Has that helped your brand or hurt your brand or not had an effect at all?
I don't think it matters. To be honest with you, I don't think it matters. By the way, and this is going to sound horrible to some people, I don't really give a shit.
That's okay.
I don't.
Right.
I mean, and I've had people actually privately say things to me, like sending Facebook Messenger messages, like, don't you think you're alienating 50% of the country? I really don't give a shit. I love this industry, and in my world, I'm a grown ass adult, and I still listen to a lot of great music from people that I don't agree with politically, and I watch movies from people that have actors in it that I don't agree with politically, because I'm a grown adult. I don't make buying decisions based on somebody's political positions. So if somebody wants to do that, they can do that. I really don't care.
Okay.
In my heart of hearts, I believe that most of the industry, and by the way, this is not why I voice my political opinions. I believe that most of the industry agrees with me. Most of the consumers agree with me. I believe that. I could be dead ass wrong. I haven't done a poll, but I'm pretty sure I bet a fair amount of money that I'm right on that. And I am a person that will tell you what I think, right or wrong. And I'm also, I pride myself on being a fairly objective person. So, for instance, I have coached youth sports for many years. I haven't done it in a few years, but I coached for more years. I'm not saying this to brag, but I was like giving like service to youth awards for all my coaching and things I've done for folks. I've never favored my children when coaching them on a team that I've coached. Why? Because when I'm their coach, I'm their coach. I'm not their father. And so I can look at something and I can say, I politically believe that this is right. But if the person that I think is most like this does something that's batshit crazy, I will call them out. And I did it today, actually, earlier today. I don't know if you saw it, Will, but I hammered what the government's doing with the COVID-19 reaction. And it's what I've said is very controversial, and I don't really care that it's controversial. So my background on Wall Street has trained me on several things. One of the things it's trained me on is to never believe that because everyone thinks someone is true, that everyone believes that something is true, that it's actually true. On Wall Street, in order to outperform the market, you need to know things that other people don't know yet about the market. I won't bore you with a lot of reasons of why that is, but that's a fact. So there are a lot of commonly held, widely held beliefs on Wall Street that people will tell you you're crazy if you dispute them, that I can prove are wrong. I can not just tell you they're wrong. I can prove they're wrong. So whenever I see a group of people in mass saying that A causes B, my initial reaction is not to believe that that's true. It's to say, let's analyze the data. Let's look at the data and let's see if it's actually true. And what I found in what I've posted recently and what I've posted politically is that oftentimes, the vast majority of times, what most people believe to be true is not only not true, but the opposite is true. And so when I say something, when you see my posts on social media, they're not just fly by night. Off the cuff, I've said, you know, I woke up and I said, screw it, I'm going to throw this post out there. There's a lot behind those posts. Now, I'm not saying that I'm always right. I could be wrong. My interpretation could be wrong because I'm human too. But I'm just saying that I think I make a credible case on most of what I say. I think I make a credible case on all of what I say, even though sometimes I might be wrong. I mean, and on this current situation we're dealing with COVID-19, I'm absolutely certain that we have not done the right thing. I'm 100% correct on that. I'm not saying that I'm 100% correct that what I'm suggesting is the right thing. I'm just saying that I know we have overreacted in a way that will have more harm than good. There's no question about that in my mind. I've looked at all the data. I've looked at all the statistics. And I have yet to have anybody come to me and say, here are statistics that prove you're wrong. They'll say, here's my theory on why you're wrong. And I'll say, but here's the statistics that say that I'm right. So I might be wrong. I could be wrong. And if I am, God help us all. But I'm going to tell you right now that what we're doing right now is not the right reaction.
So Mike, before you answer this next question with I don't give a shit, let me ask it just a slightly different way here. And I think Coop and I are, and Coop, I'm sorry if I don't want to speak for you, but I think Coop and I are rare cases and rare birds in this, that I appreciate a debate far more than the average person.
As do I.
I can hold debate with somebody that I disagree with, and I cannot get offended with it. In fact, I cherish that because I actually learn something about that person and I learn something about the other point of view. I might not change my point of view or my perspective or my opinion or my thought or what I know, in your case, what I know to be true, but it's something that the problem, I think, with putting yourself out there so much, potentially, and what I think Coop is trying to say is that this country has lost the ability to have that function. Debate is lost in the vocabulary of the American public.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And that inherently, I think, is the concern that, you know, you could alienate people who can't see it from that perspective. They think that you're just being a blowhard or a loudmouth, or the people that do agree with you, like, are in your corner, rah rah, Mike, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I think that's the concern, is that, you know, we've lost this ability to just agree to disagree or disagree friendly.
I agree with you. I couldn't agree more. And I will tell you this.
It's unfortunate.
It's absolutely unfortunate.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give you a real story. This is a real story. I'm doing an event. This is about two or so years ago in Rhode Island. I'm the first event after they open their cigar bar lounge. I go there, the event's going great, and the owner comes over and says, the Speaker of the House of Rhode Island is in the VIP room. I'd like to introduce you. Now, right away, I know I don't agree with him. I mean, well, actually, I shouldn't say that. I don't agree with him fiscally, but So my political leanings are very simple. I'm fiscally very conservative. I think smaller government is better. And by the way, I mean that on both sides. So I think the conservatives will tell you, you know, smaller government is better, except for when we think we need to intervene because it offends this belief or that belief. I believe that smaller government overall is better. The less government, the better. Government does more harm than good. I believe what Ronald Reagan said, which was that the most dangerous phrase you'll ever hear is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. That's my belief. So I don't care who's sleeping with who. I don't care if they're opposite sex, same sex. It doesn't matter to me. I'm not one of these religious right. And now I actually am a religious person, but I'm not one of these people that is going to impose that on anybody else. I think the government's role is to stay out of that. So the smaller the government, the better. The government generally does nothing right. Generally does nothing right. Or nothing well, I should say. So my philosophy is very simple. There are people out there that I disagree with that I would love to hear from them. And in fact, I did a post today on Facebook where I said, I had a very long post about the current COVID-19 thing. And I said, I'm actually looking for people to show me where I'm wrong with this analysis. And the responses I got were very political in nature. Very political. They had nothing to do with reality or with data or with any analysis. They were with, there are people dying, and I agree, and that's a tragedy. And I said that in the post. But my point is, what if less people would have died if we did something else? That's all.
Wait, get back
what
to
if it. Less people would have died?
Yeah, Mike, I want to hear the part about what you were saying about the Speaker of the House. Okay, I want to hear that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to hear the story.
So I go in and I see. So I go to the VIP room. He introduces me, and I say, "Hey, how are you? We small talk." And there's a bunch of state legislators there. And I said, "Listen, I hope you guys are going to hang out for a while. It's really busy out there. I'm going to go back out to the bar, to the lounge area. But after it dies down a little bit, I'll come and hang out with you guys for a little bit." So that's exactly what happened. It died down. I went back to the VIP lounge. I'm sitting next to my right is a state rep. To his right is a Speaker of the House. And then there's state reps all around this VIP room. Like, they're all there. Like, not all, but there's like six or seven of them there, right? So the guy to my right that's a state rep wants to talk politics. And I said to him, I said, "Listen, I don't know that we need to talk politics. Let's smoke our cigar and have a drink and, enjoy ourselves." And he goes, "Well, no, but what do you think about this? What do you think about that?" And I said, "Okay, listen, you're sucking me in. I'm going to tell you my general philosophy, which is the one I just told you, which is I believe smaller government's better. I believe the government is doing things they were never intended to do. Never." And he said, "Well, what do you mean?" And this was around the time of, when Trump had reversed by executive order the, Operation Choke Point. You guys know what Operation Choke Point was?
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Very familiar with it.
So for those out there, and Coop, correct me if I'm mischaracterizing what it was. Mm-hmm. It was a program that was put in by the Obama administration that said that he directed the Department of Justice to make it really difficult on businesses they deemed, legal businesses that they deemed weren't good for the public good. They wanted to make it difficult for them to survive and do
so
business.
So people losing their bank accounts, banks were telling them business with them. It was a serious problem. There's no question.
It was a serious problem, and it attacked the tobacco industry.
Yep.
And several other industries.
Right.
So all of a sudden, I'm running a tobacco company. This didn't actually happen to me, by the way. But I'm just saying that this is a possible scenario that happened numerous times. That I'm running my tobacco company, my cigar company, and all of a sudden my bank says, "You're cut off. You got to take your money elsewhere. We're not going to let you do any banking with us at all." Well, I'm trying to run a business. Now I got to move all my banking. I mean, so they were literally cut. It was literally called Operation Choke Point. So they were trying to choke out these businesses. To me, that's un-American. It's unconscionable and it's disgusting. And so I described this to, and Trump had literally within days prior to that, within a week prior to that, we'll say, by executive order, got rid of Operation Choke Point. And I said, "Well, let me give you an example. You know what Operation Choke Point is?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Well, that's a shame. I do. I'm not in politics. I know what it is. How do you not know what it is?" And I said, I explained what it was. And he said, well, that's wrong. I go, of course it's wrong. This is my point. Government is trying to do things they were never intended to do. So I said to
this
him,
is
I
the
said,
speaker
well,
that didn't this. Know. This was the speaker that didn't know.
No, this is the state rep that was state next rep. To me. The speaker was next to him. But the speaker was listening to this whole conversation because he piped in afterwards. And so I said to him, I said, well, let me ask you a quick question. What harm is done to anybody out there, pointing to the windows in the street, by what we're doing in here right now? Like, how are we harming them? He goes, we're not. I go, exactly. I said, so let me ask you a quick question. Why then have you and your colleagues spent so much time passing regulations that Paul, who owns this place, in order to stay open as a cigar bar, has to do 51% of his revenue in tobacco? That's what it is in Rhode Island. I said, why bother with that? What, don't you have more important things to do? You just told me that what we're doing in here does not affect the general public. He goes, well, it's for the employees. I go, interesting. I go, so let me ask you this question.
The employees that
those employees are how, well, I said, those employees are of legal age, right? They're all, in fact, I know them all personally. I said, they're all in their 20s. They're not like 16. I go, they applied willfully to work here. They knew this was a cigar shop. They knew they'd be smoking in here. They knew that, and by the way, they, most of them smoke. I said, so they understand that what they're getting into, and they're adults. So what you're really telling me is that you and your friends in the state house are way smarter adults than the adults that are not in the state house. Is that what you're telling me? That's a bit arrogant, isn't it? Of course it's arrogant. It's ridiculous. If adults decide to make adult decisions, let them make adult decisions. It's that simple. So that's my general philosophy. And I can just tell you that taking that to where we are today, Coop, you've seen a lot of my posts. I have defended Trump on many things, right?
You have a position on that, but I'll say this:
I've defended
him. Trump, I'm not going to get it. I don't want to get into whether I think you're right or wrong on that.
No. I'm not asking if you think I'm right or wrong. I'm just saying, have I defended Trump on many things?
Quite a bit, yes.
Okay. Have I hammered Trump on some things?
No.
Yes, I have.
Okay, I'm going to say
that. In fact, you commented on one of the things I hammered Trump on and said, I give you a lot of kudos, Mike.
Oh, yeah. This was over the 21 thing. Yes, you did do that. Yes. You called him out on the 21 thing.
And yes. My criticism of what we're doing right now is squarely on President Trump. Squarely.
Okay. Again, I'm not interested in – the position is fine. The question we were going at was just how we think this affected how you're operating more.
No, I mean, I think my attitude is I love my company. I love my business. I want to keep doing business. But at the end of the day, if I think that a third of America is going to be severely hurt by something that's going on, I don't really give a shit about my business.
Fair enough. That's a fair, I'll give you credit.
I don't care. I honestly don't care.
Yes.
So when I look at what's going on, I know what the carnage is going to be like by what we're doing right now. And I know what the results are going to be. I've studied it. I've looked at it. I know exactly what it's going to be. It's not going to, and in 6 to 12 months, Coop, we're going to be talking. And you're going to say, Mike, holy shit. I'm telling you, from the economic carnage that's going to happen from what we're doing right now. And by the way, I'm not saying that we should let people die. I'm just saying that I think that actually less people would have died had we done had we done something else.
Right. Okay. Fair, Mike, fair, fair point. We wanted to just ask, I thought we had to ask the question, and it's,
no,
I
want to talk,
yeah. So what I want to do, Mike, I'm going to just do a very short commercial, and I want to get into this Patriots thing. And I want to mention our sponsor, Illusione
Cigars. We got to talk Patriots now?
Yes.
Because, you know, you're in Charlotte, right?
Yeah.
And Tom Brady left us, and what I'm hearing is Cam's coming to By the way, I don't think Cam coming here is a good thing, but I'm just saying I'm hearing he's coming.
I'm hearing it too. Let me just mention our sponsor quickly. Illusione Cigars, deep in flavor, deep in your mind. We are not industry standard Illusione Cigars. Mike, if you wanted also your friend to join, it's fine too now.
I don't even know if he's still wants to do it.
But yeah, just let him know too. But while you, let me ask you a question, Mike. Are you a big Patriots fan?
I'm a huge Patriots fan.
And you know the Patriots really well, right?
Very well.
Okay. We're going to see how well you know the Patriots. Because I'm going to ask
you're going to do it. Is that really where we're going?
Yes. We're going to. I'm going to throw
trivia?
10 questions, okay? 9 of these are softball questions. The 10th one I'm going to admit is a tough one. Okay.
All right.
All right.
Let's go.
The 10th one is the tough one?
You think the 10th one?
Before you even do this, I hate you, Will. Go ahead.
I promise these are not, I'm not going to ask Deflategate questions or anything these are.
Oh, well, that I have opinions on that too.
All right. So these are the 10 questions. Okay. And the first one is.
The second one's a softball for sure.
But I don't think this is a hard one. So the Patriots, how many seasons have the Patriots played since the franchise had its inception? Don't count 2020, you know, through 2019.
Jesus. You're killing.
Wait a minute. This is an easy question.
That's not an easy question, but I'm going to say, hold on.
No cheating. No cheating either.
No. My hands are right here.
Okay.
I'm not doing anything.
If you need help with the math, just let me know. But you should know when your team was founded. Just saying.
Come on. This is an easy. I lobbed this one over. Come on.
First off, when they were founded, I wasn't even born yet, probably. But anyways, I'm going to say, hold on.
I'll give you within 40. Plus or minus 2 on this even.
Hold on. I'm going to say they were founded.
You weren't born.
I'm going to say how many years.
You weren't born.
I know I wasn't. I think they were founded in 68. I could be dead ass wrong on that, but I think it's 68 for some reason.
No.
How close am I?
Way off.
You're off by a decade, man, almost. Yeah,
they were founded in 1960. They had their 60th anniversary season this past year. These questions are from Pro Football Reference, by the way, for the fact check.
Yeah. I'm glad you looked it up before you asked them. Go ahead.
I don't know. I'm not a Patriots expert, all right?
All right.
This one, Bear, you want to ask this one? Because this was the ultimate.
I knew the answer to this question. So
I knew this one, too. Mike knows this one.
Who is the all-time scoring leader in Patriots history?
It's got to be Vinatieri.
Close.
Gostkowski?
It's Gostkowski, yeah.
Yep.
Almost 1,800 points.
The leading scorer of Patriots.
I know it was.
All right, here's the two. All right, here's the third one.
By the way, I'm going to ask you guys your favorite teams, and I'm going to ask you questions tonight.
Who show is this? All right, come on. All right, this is an easy one.
I love this. I love that you set me up this way. It's great. Coop, you know, I've said to people on Facebook, I've never loved and hated someone so much in my life. You're now that guy.
All right. This is an easy one. Okay. You only have to name two of these players, right? But there's no partial credit here. Name two players, Patriots players, who have had their number retired.
Retired by the Patriots?
Yeah. By the Patriots.
Well, my suit guy makes the suits for the guys who get their numbers retired. So I can go with Troy Brown.
Okay.
He's in the Patriots Hall of Fame, no? So he's got to have his number
retired. He's in the Patriots Hall of Fame, but
His number is not retired.
There's seven people that have their number retired.
Well, then it's John Hanna.
Yep, you got one.
Okay. Hanna, and I'm going to go with John Hanna. Boy, there's a John Hanna, and you want? I just got one more, right?
You only
got
to get one more.
Only one more, so there's six
John
left.
John Hanna's obvious. That was the easiest one. I got one in my head, but I'm not sure. I would bet my life on it. John Hanna. I'm going to go with Steve Grogan.
Wrong. It was a good guess, though. I'll say I was surprised his number wasn't retired either.
Yeah.
He should be.
Do you want to get another
shot? He's got a lot of shit. But I'm going to give you the next one that I was going to think of was, what's his name? The cornerback. By the way, this bottle was full when we started. Shit! What was the cornerback's name? He was unbelievable. It's not Chris Slade. It can't be Chris Slade.
It's not Chris Slade.
No, it's not Chris Slade.
He should have his retired, by the way, too. I can't believe they didn't retire his number.
They have not.
Oh, not Irving Fryer.
Irving Fryer.
No, I mean, he was a great player, but he sucked with the Patriots. I don't know. Help me out.
All right. So Gino Capoletti, Mike Haynes, Bob D.
Mike Haynes. That's who I was thinking of. That's a quarterback.
Yeah.
Mike Haynes. I'm like, I couldn't think of his name. Listen, hold on. This was my Mike Haynes answer. See this?
We'll give you the mic. We'll give you this one, Mike.
Not a cornerback? Of course it was a cornerback.
Yeah, we'll give you
the cornerback. Cornerback. By the way, one of the fastest players ever to play in the NFL. Maybe the fastest ever.
Yeah. I'm going to give you this one, Mike, because you did have a cornerback. So it was Mike Haynes, Bob D, Jim Hunt, John Hanna, Bruce Armstrong, Steve Nelson.
And Bruce Armstrong, I would have gotten that one eventually too, but how was Bruce Armstrong? His number's retired, but, well, anyway. I love Bruce Armstrong, but come on.
You know what's really interesting, the thing that I told Coop about this list is that there's no one
is
on this list.
Is that fuck up Mike Bellotti on your broadcast?
No. There's no one on this list. There's no one on this list that was in the Belichick era. With the exception of Armstrong.
Well, yeah.
At the tail end of his career, maybe. I don't even know. Well, I think Armstrong might have retired.
No, I don't think he was. I don't think he was. But
so
but,
then none
yeah,
of them. Then right? none of so, them. None of them are in the Belichick era.
Well, one of the things I say about how great Tom Brady and Bill Belichick have been is they've had very few Hall of Famers play for them. And they've had six Super Bowls.
Yeah, but that's...
They've been in nine.
As fair as that is, I mean, there's a lot of players in multiple leagues that have their numbers retired by teams that are fucking nowhere near the Hall of Fame for their sport.
No, what I'm saying
we're
is
talking
like,
about,
like,
or
all right,
people,
all right, so
John, Johnny Oates for the Texas Rangers. Come on, man. Fuck.
Right. All right. So let's go this way then. Forget Hall of Fame. They've had very few players that long after they've retired have had their numbers retired, but they've won six Super Bowls and been in nine.
No, that's 100% true. You're right. There's not a lot of players that you're like, oh yeah,
the greatness of Tom Brady is that he has had very few great players around him offensively. Very few.
Randy Moss is the apex of that mountain.
Yeah. Two seasons.
Yeah.
And by the way, they got him for the veterans minimum because he was on the fucking scrap heap. No one wanted him. And he had his best season of his career with Tom Brady.
That was the apex mountain for Tom Brady.
Yep.
It was. But other than that, I mean, think about it. How many great players has Tom Brady had on his offense in his career? Now, there's an argument to be fair, because I'm an objective guy, as I said earlier, politically. Tom Brady is also not allowed to be hit and hasn't been for many years. Whereas back in the 70s and 80s, the quarterbacks got killed.
Totally. And I never said, Mike, that should be held against Tom Brady either.
No,
because of the error.
It's not his fault. It's not his fault. But I'm saying he's had very few great players on his offense in his career.
True story.
Yeah.
So speaking of his players, so what Patriots team has had the highest scoring offense? What season was the highest scoring offense?
Well, it was the Randy Moss season. So it's whatever it's whatever season Randy Moss was there for his first season. When they lost to the Giants in 2000 and the Super Bowl was in 2012. So that would be the 2011-2012 season.
Can we give him partial credit on this?
What do you mean partial? That's right.
It's actually the 2007 season.
2007 season.
The undefeated.
The undefeated season.
Yeah, I think you get partial credit on that. Because
Right. You're right. I screwed that up.
It was further back. Yeah. Can you believe it?
The Giants.
Yeah.
Can you believe it? It was like –
the first time they lost to the Giants.
It was almost 7 years before you started – 7 years before you launched your first cigar. Can you believe it? I mean, that's
I know.
Crazier.
Go figure. Yep. However, by the way, I won a lot of money on that Super Bowl as a Patriots fan.
There you go. All right, you want to ask him the – good. How about the bonus question with this? And you don't have to get the exact number here. I want to see if you get close.
How many points did they score that season?
And we'll give you within 20 points.
If you get within 20 points,
Christ.
20 points.
Are you shitting me?
Come on, this is Patriots 101.
During the regular season or all the
regular season?
This is regular season.
This is a bonus question.
16 games.
16-0.
I got to get my – can I use my calculator?
I'll let him use it as long as he doesn't look it up. Yeah.
I got to get my glasses. You're killing me, guys. Watch this. I'm going to put glasses on.
You don't have to answer the bonus question if you don't want. It's a bonus
question. I'm going to answer it. Hold on. Look, I just want to show you. I'm using the calculator.
By the way, I want to just comment on all four of these questions. Mike Bellity has struggled. And if anyone in the chat room thinks I'm being unfair.
Hey, I think even though he got the second one wrong with Goskowski, but you know he did. I mean, he answered very, very quickly with Vinatieri.
I knew it was one of the two. I would have bet Vinatieri, but that's amazing. Goskowski's better.
Well, Goskowski's actually had more seasons with the Patriots than Vinatieri did. So
I'm going to say 500 points.
Pretty good answer. It was 587. Which is, you look at that number,
like
amazing
30,
number.
30.
Yeah.
That's an amazing number because it's
that's a hard number.
30 points a game would have been 480 points.
Listen, why it was a bonus question. There was no way I would expect that one because if I even went with that one, I would have said 520.
Yeah, how many people would you have expected to come up with 500 points?
That's amazing.
In a 16-game season.
Yeah, I mean,
I knew they scored a shitload of points.
Yeah. I mean,
so the next one he's going to get this one.
This is an easy one.
Yeah, you said that before.
This is an easy question.
This one's an easy question. Mike, who's the first Patriots coach? Who's the first Patriots coach to take a team to the Super Bowl? Not win, just take them to the Super Bowl.
No, Bill Parcells.
Mike, you're killing
me. Who's the first?
You're killing us. Mike, you're a Patriot. Even I knew this one. Raymond Berry.
You're right. It's Raymond Berry. You're absolutely correct. I fucked that up. You're right. It's Raymond Berry. He coached that team that played against the Bears. I'm with you. I fucked up. 86. Listen, hold
85.
On. Hold on a second.
85.
What was it? The Super Bowl was in 86.
Yes, the Super Bowl was in 86, the 85 season. Yes. Okay.
Hold on. But let me just show you something. Empty.
The chat room's killing you.
Most of the chat room are Cowboys fans, like yesteryear's America. But go ahead.
All right, here we go. Bill Belichick, as you know, is the winningest coach in Patriots history. Who's the second winningest coach in Patriots history?
It's either. Hold on. I'm not giving you an answer.
This is a little tougher one. I'm going to say it's a tougher one. I'll give you this. Is a little.
Well, it's either Raymond Berry or it's the dude from Syracuse. What's his name? He was the coach at Syracuse. Fuck, what's his name? I'm going to go with Raymond Berry, but I think it might be the dude from Syracuse. He was an Irish dude.
Dick McPherson. It's not Dick McPherson.
That's what I was going with. The McPherson. It's not. I'm going to go with Raymond Berry.
It's not Mike. It's not Raymond Berry. It's Mike Holovac from 1961 to 1968.
You want me to come up with Mike Holovac, dude?
Wouldn't you know when Belichick passed the record?
When was Mike Holovac even the coach? I'm
61
47.
To 68.
Yeah, I'm 47,
born yet.
Dude. I'm 47. I was born in 72. I just want to throw that out there.
All right. This is an easy one. Bay, you got to let you do
you
this.
You keep saying that.
This is
killing me.
But okay. This one you don't have to get exact. We'll give you within
three.
I'll give,
within three.
Within
so
three.
So how
no
many?
No matter this just, horrible setup and fake well, news that you're doing.
Hold on. Throw that hashtag at us. Hey, come on now. So
the fake news.
I watched this game again. I watched the playoff game against the Titans. Okay, and this stat was thrown out numerous times.
Yeah, so you should notice.
Okay.
How many playoff games?
I was hammered by the time it was thrown out, but go ahead.
It's okay. How many playoff games has Bill Belichick won as a head coach? So if he'd won the Titans, it would have been his.
Hold
blank,
on.
But,
there's a calculator's going out again.
Can I use a calculator?
Yeah, scary.
You can use a calculator.
Got to throw you a rope, apparently. Fucking throw hashtag fake news at us. What the fuck?
Hold on, 27. We've been 14 straight at AFCs. 14.
Kirk Kendall says you were born in 61. Stop lying.
The chat.
Tell Kirk Kendall. I'm not one of his.
Me too,
tell
Mike.
Tell Kirk Kendall I'm not one of his antique fucking pictures.
Kirk Kendall's got stuff older than him, man. Like, and older than you, older than 61 too, man. He's got some awesome stuff.
He does. There's no doubt. So let me think here. 14. They had 14 straight AFC championships because we're the America's team. And so,
14. Shots fired to all the Cowboys fans.
We are being neutral.
58.
Wow. 30.
Wow. See, I took 14 straight AFC championships. And I said, all right, that means they played at least.
But you got to double it, man. They usually get the bye.
They played at least two during those years.
Yeah, when you get a lot of those one and ones, that's the problem with the one and ones take it down. It was 30.
And listen, I used to love both of you, and you're setting me up right now.
All right,
go
this
ahead.
I guarantee you'll get right.
Okay. I can't wait. This will be the toughest one of them all, by the way.
No. I think you'll get this one right. Other than Tom Brady, who is the only other Patriots quarterback to throw for more than 4,000 yards?
Drew Bledsoe.
Yeah, you got that one.
Yeah.
That was an easy one. Yep, good one. That's
the easiest one of all time.
Well, you could have fucked it up and said Matt Castle, and then we'd really have to dick slap you. So.
Well, but I knew he did it because he only played partial season with them, and then they got rid of his ass.
Yeah.
This one I got wrong, Mike. So
Can we talk Red Sox now?
That's another show. That's a baseball show.
Can we talk?
We're talking Patriots. Why are you getting
Will Cooper? Can we talk about a team that Will Cooper cares about?
This is my show. We could do another show on that.
We're going to have you back, Mike,
if you'll have us. Right. Listen, I'm ready, and I will prepare, and I will hammer Will.
I got this wrong. Patriots career leader in sacks.
Ooh, Richard Seymour.
Wah.
See, I thought it was Willie McGinnis, and I was really wrong.
When
you
hit Chris Slade. Because
I looked
at those numbers. Slade.
No.
Andre Tippett.
Hold on.
He just said it.
Oh, fuck. You're right. Of course. Andre Tippett. In fact, I just said he should have been in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. How many, though?
This is just bonus. This is a bonus.
Do you know?
Yeah, how many?
How many sacks did he have in his career?
I'm going to go.
This number surprised me because this is
Andre Tippett's a real big-time player when you see this number.
He was, and he should be in the Hall of Fame. How is he not in the Hall of Fame? No doubt.
I don't know how he's not in the Hall of Fame with this number.
By the way, he's a member of my country club. I'm just saying. And I know him well. He's a great guy. But I would say his.
Tell him you didn't get the answer to the question.
Hold on. I will. He's going to be very upset with me, and I'm going to blame you. But I'm going to say his all-time sack total is about 92.
It's pretty close. That's really pretty good. That's a 100.
Yeah.
It's I could not believe
100,
that.
But I was too round, and I'm like, you know, I know that, like, Richard, like, what's his name, from the Eagles, fuck his name, the Hall of Famer, like, great defensive lineman,
Reggie White.
He has like 100.
Reggie White is a Packer, but that's fine. Whatever, it's cool.
So Reggie White finished at the Packers, but he was an Eagle
originally, but he's a Packers.
And Raymond Providencia would agree with me.
Well. You're both wrong, but that's fine. Whatever. 100 sacks, though.
Are you a Bear, are you a Packers fan?
I'm a Packers guy. Yeah. It's the only Boston area team that
How do you feel trying to tell people that Aaron Rodgers is the greatest of all time when he's not even close?
I think the greatest of all time is Tom Brady. I think the best of all time is Aaron Rodgers.
I don't even know what that means. What the fuck does that mean, Will? Explain that.
It means the overall skill set, what he brings as an overall player and his skill set and everything makes him the best of all time. Tom Brady, without question, is the greatest of all time because of his body of work.
Yeah, I hate that greatest of all time.
I'm going to give you credit on that explanation, but it's not even close.
Yeah. I don't get into that.
It's not even fucking close.
You can't get into it because of errors, but look, in this era, no one's – I don't know why Patriot fans get all butthurt about, like, I have never heard anyone say question the greatness of Tom Brady. It's the Patriot fans who seem to have this.
What are you? Are you or am I? Well,
who is question? Who
they
who
question is, it? They question it all the time.
No, they don't. Stop. They.
Yes, they do. They say it's Belichick, it's not Brady.
We're gonna know this year.
Of course,
I guess
they
right?
do.
We're gonna know this year. The answer is gonna come.
Well, no, we won't. The problem is we won't actually. Now, look, we will only know this year if Brady has an incredible year. Because he's like 102 years old, but he hasn't played in Tampa Bay with his prime skills. He's not in his prime right now.
No, yeah, you can't make that. See that? We'll never know the answer to that question. I don't. Yeah,
we'll never know. Now, if he comes out with the weapons they give him and kills it, it's over.
But
we're not going to have this discussion anymore.
It shouldn't. But even if he does kill it, it's still not the. There's still no way to know that because of what you just said. Like, he's in the twilight of his career. No one can argue that. And even if he does put in two or
Correct.
Maybe three
but
seasons.
But if he has a tremendous year with decent targets in Tampa Bay, it's not about Belichick. It's not about any of that. It's about the fact that he's unbelievable. And I would submit to you that during his career, several receivers had their greatest years while they were playing with him.
I just don't understand why both can't be great. I just don't understand that.
They're both great. Listen, I think Belichick's the best coach of all time. I don't even think there's a close second, even though Will's going to tell me Tom Coughlin is in the fucking discussion.
Yeah, well, fuck that, because that's stupid. Yeah, that is absurd.
I'm not even going to argue that. He's the greatest coach in my lifetime.
Tom Coughlin is the greatest coach in your lifetime?
Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Because he took to quote Hector, he took – chicken shit and made chicken salad out.
Yeah, he totally made chicken shit.
So did Belichick,
yeah,
Belichick's a master chef.
Belichick didn't have a bunch of superstars. He didn't.
Tom Coughlin questionably doesn't even know where the football field is in front of him half the time. He's always squinty-eyed and doesn't know what the fuck's going on.
He knows how to yell, though, Bear.
I'll say this, Mike. The greatest – Belichick's greatest season, in my opinion, was the first Super Bowl against the Rams. That was the best coaching job I ever saw out of him. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame coach, but that was his best work.
You don't think 2 years ago against the Rams, when the Rams were clearly the best team in football – where they held that defense, held them to 10 points.
That was a great coach. That was a great effort in the Super Bowl, one of the best coach Super Bowls. Absolutely. I'm not going to argue that.
Okay, that's Belichick, too.
But you remember that first. Hold on. Yeah.
We can keep going. I can go through all the Super Bowls they won because there's a lot of them. I don't know if you want to keep going until, like, Friday.
No, we could. Let's just ask. We have one more question to ask you.
Okay, I can't wait.
All right, now this one's a tough one. Okay.
Yes.
And I'm going to be honest. This is a hard one. I would, but I want to see. Let's just see. I was going to throw it out there.
I thought this was really hard, Mike. So
yeah. So the Patriots.
All right. We're gonna do my best.
All right. The biggest lead the Patriots have blown. I'm going to say the number of points, Bear, to kind of make this a little easier.
Against Indianapolis.
Will you let me finish the question? The biggest lead that Patriots ever blown. Let me ask the question, and then I'll tell you you're wrong, right?
I'm fucking right. Am I right? I really have to answer.
In the Brady Belichick era, right. The biggest lead they've blown is 21 points. Who's the team they blew the lead against?
Indianapolis.
How many points? No, it's the Buffalo Bills. As per Pro Football Reference.
I thought it was Indianapolis. I thought they had it in the playoffs.
That's fucking close.
I can tell you that.
It was a hard. Indy maybe. I'm sure Indy's up there. But yeah, that
it's definitely up there.
Yeah, but that was a hard question. I'm not gonna lie.
That was a really hard question.
But yeah. That was a softball,
this whole
Mike.
Bullshit about how like 9 of these are fucking softballs.
Does anyone in the chat room think I was unfair with these questions? Please let us know.
Well. The chat room, I guarantee you, they're all Cowboys fans. They don't know any of these.
Joe D's from New England. He revoked your Patriots fan card.
Joe D is a Detroit Lions fan.
But he's from New England.
He's a Detroit Lions fan.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Joe D is a Detroit Lions fan.
From New England and is a Detroit Lions fan.
No wonder he's been fucking talking shit about Aaron Rodgers in the goddamn chat.
Any discussion on that.
Oh, my gosh. Man. Does he just like misery?
See,
is that it?
Will tried to throw Joe D at me, and he doesn't know that Joe D's my rep in New England. We know that.
He brought you to the party. You guys get to the party again.
Fucking Lions. And by the way, let me just say this. I've been harsh on the response to COVID. I'm going to tell you right now, and I said this in my post today, that I have great, utter respect for the first responders and the healthcare professionals that are selflessly putting themselves in harm's way and their families in harm's way to help people they don't know. Because 99.9% of the time, they don't know these people. And Joe is one of those guys. And I actually reached out to Joe today and I sent him a text. And I said, hey, man, I hope you're doing okay. And I hope everything's all right. And I don't know if those were the exact words, but that's basically what I said.
No, absolutely.
And I said, I hope you're holding up all right. I really do. And I genuinely feel that way. I have great, utter respect for the people that are reusing masks and they're doing all this thing they're doing. And so anything I say about our response to COVID-19 has nothing to do with those people. Those people are heroes. They should be treated as heroes. And the doctors and the firefighters and the police folks and the sheriffs and you name it, all the first responders should be absolutely commended for what they're doing, because this is not a joke.
No.
This is not a joke. No. I mean, I'm not saying it's a joke, but I'm just saying we've responded to it improperly and it's going to cause more death.
So on this topic of coronavirus, and we were going to hit some more topics. How are you doing on time, Mike?
I got nowhere to go. Okay. I might have to take a piss in a little while, but I'll be all right.
Okay. Why don't we ask you one more question, and then you can take a piss. We're getting towards the end of the show, just so you know. Let me ask this question here. Can I ask this one?
Please.
Okay. Because I think we hit the first one of these already. But 2 weeks down the road, Mike, as a cigar brand owner, what does this business look like?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I have actually no answer to that. And I will tell you that here's for two reasons. One, I could be dead ass wrong about COVID-19 and it could get spiral out of control. I'm not a doctor. And on top of that, I would say that even if it doesn't spiral out of control, I have no way to be able to predict what kind of batshit crazy things our government are going to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. They may not do batshit crazy things. They may do crazy, really ridiculous batshit crazy things. So I have no idea.
Mike, I have a follow-up for you, and this isn't on there, Coop. But so, you know, Mike, we've talked a little bit about how you've organized your business and how your sales are obviously run by brokers. You know, this has put obviously not just yourself as the business owner in a lot of in a tough spot, but obviously the people that have worked for you are basically not by your doing, but just by the nature of the business, by the nature of your agreement with them, and by the nature of what the economy is at this point. They're basically all, including Joe D, who's watching right now, they're basically furloughed until further notice, until they can actually do their job. What, you know, there's been a lot of criticism going around about businesses and business owners, you know, with 2 weeks in, they're already letting go employees and things like that. What measures have you taken as a business owner to help support the people that have obviously supported the business? Because again, the nature of your business is a lot different. It's not an employee-employer relationship. You know, and they're kind of in this forced furlough, much like to yourself, like you are as well. You're kind of in a forced furlough situation too, because you can't do anything either. What kind of measures have you looked at or taken as a business owner to not just for yourself, but also for the people that, you know, that rely on the business this way, not just your business, but a lot of other companies, hire brokers. You know, Joe works for a lot of other companies, not just yours.
Yeah, he sure does. And I would tell you that it's tough because I don't have a lot of employees. I have one. And the rest are independent contractors. So I look at it and I'm like, you know, okay, I've got a problem. I love these guys. And I want them to succeed. And I know they're shut down, but at the same time, I've got to figure out from a balance standpoint what makes sense for me. And I also now, given the current stimulus package that was passed, figure out what is appropriate from an ethical standpoint. Like, in other words, these are all 1090. I don't have any in-house sales reps. So these are all 1099 employees, they're contractors. They're going to get their compensation from unemployment if they need it, and or from the $600 a week that they would normally that the government put into the stimulus package. So I look at it and I go, you know, look, it's tough because do I pay them? Or I don't know how do you figure out what I pay them, right? Like they're straight commission employees. So it's a very difficult situation I feel for all of them. And I that's why I reached out to Joe and several others of my sales reps, but it's a very difficult situation. It is. It's tough. I mean, I can pay them, but let's be honest. I'm going to be very clear. I'm a Wall Street guy that would love to do the right things by everybody, but I'm also a business owner. So what if this goes on for 6 months or 5 months or 10 months or 7 months or 8 months? At what point do I stop paying my independent contractor who decided to start their own business? At what point do I say, I'm not going to pay them? And how do I figure out what I pay them? Because every month is different. Their sales are different every month. And this is a very slow part of a year normally, actually. So it's a tough situation. That said, anything I can do to help out my sales reps, I'm going to do it. It's going to happen.
It's a tough position for everyone in the industry, Mike. You're like I said, you're in a unique position too. But even with people who have in-house reps, they work on commission too.
Well, sure. You know, and I guarantee you there's going to be a lot of people that are in-house reps are going to be laid off or furloughed. I guarantee it.
We already saw it with LaFleur. And I imagine.
Correct.
Yeah. And I can tell you that I agree with that statement. Because when sales reps are not selling, it's a big expense.
Now, I will say this. If a sales rep has been killing it for me, like just gangbusters, working hard, writing business, opening new accounts, there's nothing I wouldn't have done for that salesperson. Nothing. Because I come from that background. So there's a whole different scenario. So it depends. Like, they're all independent contractors. You got one that has been going 110%, killing it, working hard. And you got one that's been sitting on his couch eating Doritos. And I'm not saying that any of mine have been doing that, but I'm just saying that. So would I give the same sort of compensation in these tough times to the guy eating Doritos on his couch versus the guy that's out there killing every day? No, because I'm from Wall Street. If you're killing it and you're sacrificing, you're busting your ass for me, I will do everything I can to make sure that you're made whole. If not, we'll see.
So, Bear, why don't we do a read here, and then we can get into the last few topics on COVID.
Sounds good.
You want me to do that, or are you?
I'll go. Mike, you can go ahead and take your break. And with just over a decade of ownership, Michael's Tobacco has become the premier tobacconist for the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area and cigar patrons the world over. With two convenient locations in Euless, just a quick jaunt from the DFW airport, and Keller, Texas, Michael's Tobacco stands as a beacon for the Texas cigar retailer. Michael's was the very first cigar lounge in the state of Texas to add a full bar to its list of ever-growing accommodations. Proprietor Mike Peacock is a former PCA board member and has now made Michael's a family affair by having his son, Bob, join the ownership force. Under general manager and master storyteller Tracy Spence's leadership at Michael's, his self-proclaimed greatest accomplishment has been assembling, quote, the greatest team in the cigar retail business, unquote, as well as build some of the finest relationships with the industry's most respected individuals. Inventory director Jason Fields handles and maintains two of the area's proudest humidors, containing premium cigars for everyone from the everyday smoker to the most ardent collector of rare puros. Under Mike, Bob, Tracy, and Jason's example, they have enlisted a staff of Kevin, Austin, myself, Joe, Silas, Brandon, and Kyle that now collectively boast 100 years combined industry experience. Together, they have brought together a true and blessed mainstay for their respective communities. Whether you're celebrating an anniversary, birthday, hole-in-one, or just a desire to relax, Michael's Tobacco will have a perfect cigar waiting for you with exquisite beverage pairing and lively conversation. Visit michaelstobacco.com for more details and a calendar of upcoming events. Michael's Tobacco, not just a cigar shop, but the perfect blend of Texas hospitality in the days of yore.
Thank you, Bear. Hey, Mike, I got a question from Jared here. He asked me to ask this.
Jared from Christoph?
Jared from Christoph.
I can't wait.
Tell me about Bull Eagle Italy.
By the way, I love him, but go ahead.
Bull Eagle Italy. What is that?
So, all right. So, Jared and I go back a ways, and we break each other's balls a lot. And
two guys from New England, I can't imagine.
Right. So he came to me and he said, "What the fuck is that logo?" So if you know that I have the Imperial logo, which is an eagle, and then I have the Imperial East Laro, which, yeah, there you go. There's the eagle, right? And then I have the Imperial East Laro, which on a lot of my marketing material has a bull on it. And Imperia is an Italian city in Italy, which is a port city towards the coast of France. So he goes, what were you thinking? I go, well, this is going to make a lot of sense to you. And I knew at the time it wasn't going to make a lot of sense. But one of my sales reps at the time and I came up with this idea when we had several drinks in us. And I said, listen, Imperia is the Italian sister city to Newport, Rhode Island, which is where I've had my summer house for many years. Newport is a my favorite place on planet Earth. I love Newport.
It's a wonderful place.
It's the greatest. So I have a summer house there. So I wanted to name my original cigar after something that meant something to me. And I said, I can't name it Newport because there's a cigarette company that would kill me. So I said, Imperia. That sounds like a cigar brand. And Imperia, and I'm Italian, by the way. So Imperia is the Italian sister city to Newport, Rhode Island. Let's go with Imperia. So then I said, well, I need a logo, like a year in. Like when I did the original blue label, there was no logo. And I said, a year in, I need a logo. I got to think an Imperial logo. And he goes, Imperia's Italian, Roman Eagle. So I made the Roman Eagle, which is what you see on the banner you just showed there. And then I made the Islero. There you go. There's a Roman Eagle right in the middle there. And then I made the Islero blend, and I named it. And by the way, Aventador and Islero are both named after Miura Fighting Bulls, which are both the names of Lamborghini supercars.
Yep.
Okay. So a lot of people don't know this, but all of Lamborghini's cars are named after Miura Fighting Bulls because old man Lamborghini was a Miura Fighting Bull fanatic. Murcielago was a bull. Islero was a bull even before Murcielago. Yeah. Countach was a bull. You can go on down the line. They're all bulls. And they all came out of the Miura Fighting Bull area of Spain. So that's Bull Eagle Italy. That's it. Now, the funny part of that is we were at Kurt Kendall's place in New Hampshire for his big, I forget what he calls it. He calls it the
Smoking Blues Barbecue,
he calls it. So he calls it the Smoking Blues Barbecue. He's got blues bands, and it's awesome. And he runs one of the great retail shops in America, let alone New England. So we're there, and Chris, Jared and I are sitting at the bar with a bunch of the other cigar people at the event a couple of years back. And he goes, tell me about this marketing. I go, well, it won't make sense to you unless I explain it to you. And I explained it to him. And when I explained to him, I said, now let me show it to you picturally. And I showed him a marketing piece I had, which had a bull eagle in Italy on it. And we both lost it. Now, in our defense, we were hammered at the time. We were laughing so hard that the Corona Beer Girls came over to us and said, are you guys okay? We're worried about you. So bottom line is that Jared makes fun of my marketing, but there is a marketing piece from Christoph that has Glenn Case sitting on a motorcycle with a ceramic, I don't know, concrete thing that says Hot Coals on it in front of him. And he's making fun of my marketing. I'm just saying. They're all over. I've seen them in probably 3 or 4 dozen cigar shops around America that have this piece.
I've seen that, I've seen that one.
It's a great piece.
It's horrible. What the fuck is that thing? Like, first off, I love Glenn. Glenn's a great guy. And him and I both come from finance, and, you know, we have a little connection. And Glenn and I are friends. But he's not a biker. He might ride a bike, but he's not a biker. So he's sitting on the bike, acting like a biker. And there's this circular thing. It looks like a fire pit that's made out of concrete. And it says Hot Coals on it. And he's smoking a cigar. And I'm thinking, what the hell does that have to do with Christoph? Not to mention the ad that was in several magazines with Jared and his massive head. But that's a different story.
That's Jared's favorite ad, though. You'll ask him, man.
He hates it.
Of course he does.
You know why he hates it? He's not a moron. I mean, when that ad came out, I walked up and I go, Jared, what the fuck are you thinking with this ad? I mean, what are you doing with this ad? He goes, I didn't like that picture. I go, well, looks like we know who the bitch is. Glenn decided that ad's going in. That's it.
Interesting. How long have you known Jared for?
8-10 years, something like that. 6-7 years, I don't know. Several years. I'll give you a story that Coop, you might actually enjoy here. Not enjoy in the way that I shouldn't have said it that way. I didn't mean it the way I said it, but you might actually find amusing. So you know Joe Hozempa.
Yeah, Stogie Geeks.
Correct. Right. So he had a radio show before he was on Stogie Geeks called Cigar Club Radio or something. So I'm on the show several times, numerous times. He's in Rhode Island. I'm from New England. So I'm on the show a lot of times. And the shows are always great. And they're entertaining and funny and all that stuff. Not as funny as the Ass Breath episode, but they're pretty funny. But so Jared calls in and starts breaking my balls the way he just did about my marketing. And then the show derails. Derails. Like,
wait, Joe Hozempa's show?
Yes. Like, goes off the rails. Like, Joe is, like,
okay,
talking about how when he got out of college, he lived above a bunch of college girls. And I'm like, listen, this is not the venue for this. I know where you're going. So I jokingly said, this will be the last episode of Cigar Club Radio. Next week, we'll have Business Talk Radio. And we're on a real radio station. Guys, I shit you not, that was the last show, and the next week was Business Talk Radio. It was done. And Jared was on the show with me.
And you had no idea this was happening?
I had no idea. I had no idea.
That's
so.
It's funny, but
that
it's not.
Actually happened. And Jared was on the show with me. And he was on the air with us when I said that, and he started laughing, and we were joking, and then the next week it was gone. And then he was on Stogie. But I love Joe. Anyways, he's fine.
Go figure. Go figure that, right? Go figure that.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
I was the guy on his last show on radio.
Speaking of Jared, joining us on Primetime Special Edition is Jared Trudeau, Vice President of Sales of Christoph.
Hey, put your fucking video on, you fucker.
Now.
You're trash, Mike Bellady.
Oh, shit.
Listen. You're trash.
Listen, there's a couple things I want to say. One, I love all you guys, but I really love Jared. He's my man. I love this guy.
It is mutual.
Have
Mike
you guys
Bellady.
Seen the pictures of him doing the whole wedding thing?
The Indian wedding?
Yeah,
have
that was
you
exciting
seen this
stuff.
Fucking shit?
Yes, it's awesome,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, I remember you were talking about that on the show when we had Jared.
No, those Indian weddings are the parties.
I didn't have
man.
Great respect for his wife, who I've met several times with Jared. Obviously, because why would I meet her without Jared? But if I hadn't had great respect,
guys,
for her, I would
come
go
on, guys. I didn't come on for controversy.
Yes, you did. Wait, hold on a second, Jared. You didn't come on for controversy?
No, I'm the least controversial guy in the cigar business.
No, so here's what I'll say. Those pictures are fucking gold. I'm just saying, the pictures of Jared are gold. And
everybody thought Marissa looked great and like an Indian person.
Of course.
Nobody made that mistake with me. I looked like I was supposed to be bringing fucking luggage to somebody's hotel room. That's what I look like.
Jared,
I look bad.
Jared, it'd be like if Padron posted a video in their factory saying, here's our greatest cigar roller, and it was me. I'm not
sore
the greatest
thumb.
Cigar roller because I'm a sore fucking thumb. White guy from Boston.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, bud. Listen, I knew I wasn't fitting in particularly well. So we met a guy who was 104 years old. And we were walking around the village. He was 104 years old. And he told the father of the bride that I was the first white person he'd ever seen. That's how rural the part of India was that we were in. And it was like I was drinking like water buffalo milk and like trying to smoke a cigar. It
listen,
does not fare well.
Post.
It does not fare
unbelievable.
Well. It is.
Listen,
Jared. It was wild.
Now, listen, Jared.
You say that, Jared, and then on some reviews now, there's going to be water buffalo milk as tasting notes, man.
Oh, man, I shouldn't Come give in. These fucking guys ideas. What were you saying, Michael Bellamy?
I mean, I don't even remember. And I'm out of booze, too. That's a problem. But
that's good.
I mean, I am. I got nothing. I got an empty bottle. I got an empty glass. It's a big deal. But, Jared, what did I say to you about 3-ish weeks ago? I asked you a question. Do you remember what it was?
No.
When you were still in India. I said, please tell me you're going to be in
Fort Worth. Roast?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I was at the roast and I was the MC of the roast. And I said, these pictures give me unlimited material. Unlimited.
For all of eternity. For all of eternity.
I mean, a lifetime of material. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, I could have probably convinced Don Wiggins and Mark Scott to put a big screen up and, like, project the pictures up there for my jokes. That's how
those guys wouldn't have gotten the jokes, though. Those guys don't know me.
It doesn't matter.
Trust yeah, but you me. Would have been so mean that it would have landed.
I would have been that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Listen, here's what you know for sure from me. If I'm doing a roast, either as the MC or as a roaster, it's going to get brutal.
Yeah.
Except for one time. Which one are you doing?
The Queensberry Cigar and Pipe. The
when is that
roast.
Coming up? When is that?
I want to say May. That's I was so. Yeah, I don't know.
That's not happening.
Yeah, it's at some point in May. Yeah.
It's not happening. I'm just going to say it's not happening. I'd be shocked. But I think they should bring me I'm going to have to go up there and I have a few things to say because I had some jokes for you, Jared, and you didn't show up in 2 years, 2 straight years. You've lived in Texas. You haven't shown up.
Yeah, I've never been invited except for by you.
What? Christoph was there the last year.
Yeah.
But Jared may live in Texas, man, but he's always on a plane, though.
Wait a second. Christoph was invited to this roast last year.
Glenn went.
Glenn did go. Do you know what one of the jokes about Glenn was?
What?
The only thing whiter than Glenn Case's teeth are the robes and hoods he wears in the woods on Saturday night.
Yikes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yikes.
Damn. Now,
I didn't tell that joke, by the way. I didn't tell that joke. By the way, I wish I did. That's a good joke. It's a great joke.
That sounds like a Clay joke.
Well, it is. Now, you know Clay. Here's a guy that knows Clay. I mean.
Yeah. That sounds like a Clay joke big time.
I'm still frozen. Holy shit.
You're frozen?
Like, hey, Bear.
That was said.
Bear, do you know who David Jolly is? Bear, you know David Jolly.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Do you know Chris Weathersby?
Yeah, everyone knows Chris.
So, can I get completely uncensored for this joke?
Well, you already dropped the hoods thing, so I mean, it's Coop Show. You have
like this might be worse.
All right.
Oh God.
I'm I don't know if I can you watch. The joke. Yeah, I'm just gonna tell it anyways. It doesn't matter. It'll be fine.
We've lost all control of this.
Well, it's gonna be fine.
Okay.
I mean, look at
the famous last words.
Record,
that's what we said on Joe Hosepka's radio show.
For the record,
and it was
for
gone.
The record, you guys led Jared onto this fucking podcast.
He wanted to rebut. He wanted to rebut your statement.
Oh, I just wanted to say you were trash.
So I was the MC this year. I was the MC this year, and I said to Mark Scott, who's one of the owners of Underground, I said, listen, I appreciate you making me the MC, but if I were you, I would have gone in a different direction. I would have chosen David Jolly. Because think about how great it would be to have Chris Weathersby's dick on stage telling jokes.
Oh, my
God.
That's a great joke.
That's a great fucking great joke. I mean...
Last year, so there's a General
Will,
Cigars
wake up.
Rep. There's I'm a General up. Cigars rep.
Look at Bear. Look at Bear. Bear, that's funny, right?
I think this is...
Will, do you know who David Jolly is?
I think I know the name. I mean, this is Texas rep.
It doesn't
stuff
matter. So,
like.
I want you to look at Bear right now and realize how funny that joke is.
It went completely over my head. I don't get the Texas rep.
I know.
I guess. as I'll Bear will tell you, I don't get it.
Bear, is that funny?
No comment.
That's how you know it's funny.
That's how you know it's funny. You can't even talk. Bear, is that funny? Wake up, Bear.
I'm up. I'm awake.
What's anyway?
Bear's done. It's over. Good night, Bear.
All right.
This is the last fucking show that you guys will ever have.
This will be the second time we've killed the radio program.
The only other time that Jared and I have been on the same show, it got canceled.
Well, listen, wait, that was Joe Hozempa's show. I'm not going to comment there. Well, our show is going.
Can we, though?
The thoughts, they don't reflect the host.
I've known Joe Hozempa.
I'm
18. Since I was like 18 years old, I've known him for an unbelievably long amount of time. And he's a
I like
dear
Joe.
Friend
I'm not
of
making
mine.
Fun of Joe. Let's be
We're not
clear.
Making fun of Joe. That being said,
we're not at all.
When Joe, that being said, but, and this is a hard but, when Joe had a radio show, which was called like Cigar Talk Radio or Cigar Lounge Radio or something like that.
Cigar Club. And
Cigar Club Radio. And Mike right. Bellady was a feature. I had been on the show before, it was really funny, but it was really weird. It was like, you know, you could tune in and Joe would be talking about a cigar, and you could tune in 5 minutes later, he'd be talking about mountain climbing, and you could tune in five minutes later, and he'd be talking about ballpoint pens.
How he lived above a bunch of college chicks when he was got out of college. I mean,
it was just a ramble, just like Joe. Like, it was like a very rambling stream of consciousness, kind of, but interesting, like, to listen to, whatever. But apparently not interesting enough at the end of this. So Mike was a guest. And he was getting interviewed by, and Joe always encouraged people to like call in with questions. Yeah. And so I call in Mike's mid-interview live radio, terrestrial radio. And I call in and I say, it's Jimmy from Boston. And I'm like, oh, Mr. Bellady, how are you this evening? I'm a huge fan.
By the way,
huge fan.
Once I heard his voice, I knew who it was.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it was like, I'm a huge fan. Anyways, I was just curious if you could walk us through some of your marketing. I'm under the impression that the Muir a fighting bull and it's a city in Italy. And how does this bull eagle Italy thing all reconcile in your head? Your thoughts, sir. And just kind of cut it off.
And then
Mike had
happened.
To go on this ridiculous explanation, which doesn't make sense even right now. Like, he just gave a really long explanation.
Tell the story
and
about,
I was sitting
tell
here
the story
just
about
as
twins. Tell the story about twins.
Oh,
that's
when we had the whole staff.
When we were
when
crying
we were injured.
And laughing.
Yeah. this fucking idiot, Mike Bellady, he starts explaining to me his stupid three-country name of a cigar.
For the record, I said, listen, if you just listen to me, you'll understand. And then I explained
I'm sitting there, and granted, I probably had a bottle of Tito's to my face because I was staying at the hotel.
Yeah, and
I could
so
walk
did I.
Behind
I mean,
me.
We were both a mess.
And Mike's explaining this stupid-ass idea to me, and I'm not getting – I mean, I'm just dead behind the eyes. He's explaining it to me, and I'm truly trying to understand, and I'm
dead behind
the eyes.
But then I showed
him
a picture.
And then he showed me a picture which explained even less than what his words were explaining. And we were laughing so hard. And John Carney was there from LFD, and he didn't know what we were doing. And the Corona Girls, they came over
Corona
to
girls.
Us
yeah.
and were like, do you guys need some water
Are you okay?
or napkins or something? Because we were literally
Can
crying.
We get you
they
something?
We were upset. Yeah. Yeah. It was hilarious. It was hilarious.
It was actually hilarious.
I still don't understand any of the branding. And Mike,
well,
you
listen.
Should change your slogan to, and we've talked about this for many years, boutique factory, boutique cigar company, getting more boutique by the day. I think that's
true.
Is the,
by
the
way,
slogan.
That's a line I gave. That's a line I gave him. I think 2016.
Maybe.
He comes up to my booth at a trade show, and he goes, "How are things?" I go, "I'm boutique and getting more boutique by the day."
I still think we need to make some marketing around that.
Right. Now, that being said, you and your company, by the way, I love you. You know I love you. Yeah. I love Glenn. Glenn is one of a laundry list of people that have decided not to try to drink with me.
But he could. By the way, he could.
He decided not to because he didn't want to go down that road because that would have been a tough road that day.
Yeah.
This was actually last year at the UG thing. So I said, I love both these guys. And I go into a cigar shop and I am looking at this in Rhode Island, in Jared's hometown. And I'm looking at this picture on the wall. And it's the one I described to you guys. It's Jared. It's Glenn on a motorcycle.
Oh, Glenn's hot coals.
Not a biker. Hot coals.
Yeah, that's
what
badass,
the
guys.
Fuck.
Yeah.
It's almost as bad as the one where your head is massive.
Oh, where I look like Andre the Giant? It's
well,
in case
where
of
your
my
head
prom
looks
picture.
Like Andre the Giant. No. Let me be clear. Your head looks like Andre the Giant. Your body looks like a mini me. I mean,
so the problem with that photo shoot, so we told the photographer it was exorbitantly expensive. It was a professional photographer from Chicago, and we told him we need a really good and we did not get this, but we need
and they wanted to zoom in on Jared's head
and put me in the foreground. I look like Andre the Giant. And so anyway, we told this photographer, I'm like exactly what we aren't as a company. We are not the tufted leather chair with a, you know, $1,000 glass of scotch.
No,
and
we're the motorcycle with hot coals.
No, we're not that either. But our whole philosophy is trying to be the kind of people want to do business with, right? We're normal people enjoying cigars in a normal way. And so I told the photographer, I'm like, look, I don't want the crushed velvet. I don't want the tufted leather chair. I don't want this antique 50s kind of crap. I want a normal people cigar photo shoot, if that is at all possible, because I didn't even want to do the ad in the first place. So we get there and they're like, we're just going to take some shots against a blank background. They took 45 shots and then an aide comes up to me and whispers in my ear, Mr. Trudeau, if you could please zip up your fly, that would be great. I took 45 fucking pictures with my fly down, all the way down.
That was
a bad start. That
good
was a
news
bad
is
start.
They probably didn't see anything.
No, they didn't see anything. Thanks, Mike.
So I got a question for both of you guys. Yeah. So this is actually something that I'm interested, just because both of you guys just happen to be on air with us. You know, as both of you guys have mentioned in previous conversations with myself and in previous interviews too, like, as you mentioned, Jared, for a second, you guys aren't the traditional cigar guys. You know, you don't have this Cuban heritage. You don't have this lineage. You guys are two guys from New England.
What do you mean?
What I mean is, like, how have two guys from New England able to get into the cigar industry and been as successful as you both are? What do you guys attribute that to? Yeah. And how do you think your background as New Englanders has kind of lent to that success?
I think it's the fact that we're both batshit crazy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that certainly helps.
I mean,
and also,
Jared's background's in retail, right? Am I right?
Yeah, that's true.
And he was very successful in retail. My background was in Wall Street, and I was successful in Wall Street. And here we are. I just, you know, sometimes things in life just happen. And Jared's story about how he got his initial gig at Christoph is one of the great stories I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, it's awesome. Absolutely.
Jared may not even realize that I remember this story, but he had no experience in the cigar industry. And I don't want to put I just kind of did, but I really didn't mean to put you on the spot, but you should tell that story. It's unbelievable. But go ahead, Jared.
Yeah. So I'll answer Bear's question first. And then if people want to hear that story, I'll tell it. But
no, it's a great story. Everyone wants to hear it. Go ahead.
But to Bear's question, I think if you can sell cigars in New England, you can sell cigars anywhere. I think have an unbelievable mixture of extremely successful, extremely competent, extremely driven. The top of the top of cigar retailers are, some of them are in New England. They're around the country. They exist in every state. But I think New England has, you know, the twins, the two guys. They have some of the most successful and most prolific retail businesses. So you have that really intense dynamic of you have to be a business person to succeed in those stores. You have to be able to speak Garofalo's language. You have to be able to speak Sean and Kurt's language because they aren't in it in a fly-by-night sort of way. If you've ever been to a two-guy shop or a twin or a Kurt's shop, either of Kurt's shops, you know that they take their business really seriously. Their salespeople are well-trained. So you have to be able to speak the language that those guys speak. We also have an inordinate amount of the opposite, which is fly-by-night.
They don't know their ass from their elbow.
Fly-by-night, they, you know, I love jerking off, but nobody's ever going to pay me to do it, Mike. You know, it's like you have to.
And there you have it, guys.
A lot of real hobbyists out there that really rob Peter to pay Paul, and they put their retirement into the business and haven't been able to really get cash flow the way that they need it. So you have to be able to walk into a store and resonate with that guy. And then you have to walk into a meeting with Dave Garofalo and hold your own and not let him run all over you. And I think there's very few parts of the United States. There are good and bad retailers in every part of the United States. But I think from my perspective in New England, it's hard communicators. It's fast paced. There's a real high density of accounts. You have to be really, the hardest thing about being a rep is it's a very easy job to not do.
That's a great line. I'm stealing that fucking line.
And if you're not in an organization or a sales infrastructure that can hold you accountable, or you're not holding yourself accountable, it's very, very challenging to be successful because everybody wants to do it. I let a sales rep go. There's 10 people that will email me before it hits the internet that they want that job, right? So it's a very easy job to not do, and it's hard to hold people accountable. Yeah. So
I let a salesperson go, and nobody emails me at all.
Right. Well, because of your anonymity. But it's
a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe some better posters.
No. So what Jared is saying is absolutely correct there, that like I have tremendous respect for the most successful retailers in New England and everywhere. But you asked the question about what makes us successful. And you look at a guy like Dave Garofalo. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. Two Guys doesn't carry my cigars at all. I'm not going to get into why they don't. They don't. But I have a tremendous respect for Dave Garofalo as a businessman. And whenever I see him, now in the COVID-19 era, we might stay 6 feet apart. But normally, until about 3 weeks ago, we'd give each other a man hug. And I would say, hey, I have great respect for you. I hope you're doing well. Hope the family's good, all that stuff. And he's not carried my cigars, not one day since I started my company. He knows who I am, but there's a reason why he doesn't. And without getting into that, it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with other issues, but he won't carry my cigars. It's not going to happen.
So I'll characterize it a different way. So what Jared described really well, and you kind of added to it, Mike, was I'll boil it down to one word, and it sounds like tenacity, right?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like tenacity is an underlying, you know.
Jared, he said that way better than you and I did.
Personality, that trait that you guys have.
And he's never done it.
Do you attribute that to where and the why you grew up and where in terms of New England, or is that something that you picked up in your varied backgrounds, you know, finance and business.
So unlike Jared, I grew up in the hood. I grew up in Hartford, Connecticut.
You are such a fucking liar. I grew up in the actual hood.
No, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Woonsocket. Government housing.
That's not Hartford, dude. Hartford eats Woonsocket.
I usually defend you on the Hartford thing, but Elizabeth Park is pretty nice. The governor lives over there.
It's not nice. But anyways, no, I'm joking. But here's what I would say. You know, I think Jared and I both grew up, and I've known Jared a long time. So, and I love Jared. I really do. We break each other's balls, but I love this guy. And whenever I'm in Texas, we try to figure out if we're in Texas at the same time, even though he lives there and he travels a lot.
He has an address there, but
he does have an address there. And I have an address in the greater Boston area. And right now, both of our addresses are real because we can't go anywhere. But here's what I would say. You know, neither one of us grew up in a wealthy situation. And I think Jared worked really hard from my knowledge of his history and made himself a success on a retail business. And then his story, I'm telling you, at some point, if it's not tonight, it's got to be another. You got to have him tell the story about how Glenn decided to hire him to be the first inside sales rep at Kristoff.
We covered it.
It's
actually
unbelievable.
We actually covered it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
we
a
have
great
it
story.
By the way, the reason I don't remember a lot of stories unless they make sense, unless they matter. That story matters to me because I grew up in Hartford and went to a really good college, and you know, no one in my family went to a college like that, and I came out and went on Wall Street and I had some success, and all of that had to do with the same mindset that Jared had displayed in that story about how he became the first Kristoff rep. And I believe fully that in life, it doesn't matter what your industry is, if you have that drive, determination, and you have the talent, you're going to be fine. It's going to happen. I tell my kids all the time, I have three kids. I have a 21-year-old daughter, a 19-year-old daughter, and a 16-year-old son. And I've told them since the time that they could listen to me that, listen, as we're driving around and we're doing our thing and we're going on family drives or whatever, we're going to dinner or whatever, I'd say, you know, you see that? You know, most of this is unfortunate, by the way, I'm about to say, but most of the world is incompetent. Most of America is incompetent. If you're just competent, you'll be fine. If you're competent and you bust your ass and you're talented, you could own the world. You really could own America. And you can do really, really, really well. And I don't mean that to disparage anybody, but I'm saying that, you know, there's the, you know, what Jared did to get where he is now with Kristoff is not an accident. That's a mindset. And the mindset gets you to the successful level that he's at. And I have great respect for him for that, even though I break his balls every time I can. And if he ever shows up at the UG, I'm really going to break his balls.
Well, the breaking balls thing.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. And someday, Mike, maybe you'll be successful too.
So the breaking balls thing aside, this is a great example of something. Now, and we've had conversations.
You're the best, Jared.
We've had individual conversations individually with you guys. And Jared, one of the things that I absolutely love about you is your mentality and your philosophy about this business, and how, you know, there is competition inherently. And I know the way that you hold your reps accountable and everything. And Mike, you come from a very you came from a very cutthroat background in Wall Street.
Very. And it's hard to get rid of that mindset.
So that's my question. How does it get to this point where the four of us are sitting down and having a conversation? You guys are ripping each other, and that's all in good fun and everything. But at the very end of the day, you guys are good friends and everything. How do you guys separate that? You two specifically, who have such a terrific business acumen and attack this business, frankly, a little bit differently than a lot of other folks, but you still can rein it into where you guys can hug each other at the end of the day, even though you're competitors. How do you separate that?
So I'll give you my answer, and I don't know if Jared's answer is the same. First off, in my world, I respect people that work their balls off and make a success out of themselves. And I also respect people that have integrity. So Jared has both of those. And so, sure, on some level, we're competitors, right? But realistically,
not really, though.
I mean, Jared, I was going there. I mean, I was
as long
say,
as you're
like,
not talking about shelf space or sales, like, yeah, we're competitors.
I mean, realistically, Christoph and I are not in the same realm, right?
No, we are, I though. Mean, we're fighting over the same shelf space, and we're eating the same large lunch.
We are fighting over the same shelf space, and I would never, even against people I don't really personally like, which there aren't many of them in this industry, I would never speak negatively about them personally if I'm in the effort of getting their shelf space. But I can tell you this, that I have great respect for Jared. I have great respect for Glenn. And I would never, ever, ever. And there are certain things in life that are more important than business. Even though I'm from Wall Street and it's very cutthroat, friendships and honor and integrity and all of that means a whole lot more to me than anything having to do with business. And Jared's been nothing but great. In fact, Jared, one of my top accounts, Jared helped me to get into, you know, in Rhode Island when I first was starting out, when I first started my company. Jared and I are friends. I would never, ever, ever do anything to cross him. I would always do everything I can to help him out. And I'm sure he would do the same for me, even though he thinks I'm a piker.
100%. No, I don't think you're a piker. I just think you work really hard for no reason, but, or at least for no results.
Same thing.
But for me to answer your question, Bear, I think it's really easy to separate when you surround yourself with people that give a shit the way that you do. I mean, I always say, and I've said this to you a million times, Bear, and I mean, you can't teach give a shit. Right. And my motto when I trained, like I was Christoph's first sales rep. I've been with them for a really long time. I've hired and trained everybody that works for the company and built our sales infrastructure. And now the company's a lot different now than when we started shipping bundles out of Glenn's house with our cubicles in his basement, you know? So we're in 32 countries. We're a real business now. And there's still me, Glenn, and Ward, who's our operations guy that make up the management team, you know? So we're lean, but we're competent. Like what Mike said, we try to be competent people. We try to be the kind of people want to do business with, and it pays us dividends every time with the retailer in the back end. But in terms of separating that sort of tenacity that you were talking about and that cutthroat from coming from both of Mike and my corporate backgrounds, in the cigar business, it's really easy to do. That's almost the reason I'm in the cigar business, is because we're helping brick and mortar retailers make money. You know, I mean, there's how many times, Mike, have you worked with a new broker that probably doesn't work for you anymore or something? And the broker says, or the independent rep or whatever, they say, you walk into an account, you shake the retailer's hand, you give him a hug, you sit down, you smoke a cigar, and then you get in the car. And then my first reaction is, and they say, oh, we'll be back in 8 weeks. And I look at the sales rep and we get back in the car and they're like, oh, you ready for lunch? And I'm like, I'm ready for you to start fucking working. You know, what did we just do? You know, like if you called your bank and said, I got 8 handshakes today, would the bank take that to pay your mortgage? I don't fucking think so. We're in the business of doing business. Yeah. And it's really important when you work with a retailer, if you think you're doing them favors by not talking about business with them, you're totally wrong. You're totally wrong, because your job is to make the retailer more money. You're running a little shop inside of their humidor and your job is to be profitable for them. But the difference is, when I was in big box corporate retail and working for Fortune 500 companies, that was the only goal, was to make money. It wasn't about partnership. It was I remember one time, and I'm young and I've always looked young. I'm older than I look, but I remember I had this VP of Red Bull come in a $2,000 suit and stuff like that. And we were in a huge store for Target, $120 million store. And we were walking down these register end caps all at the front of the store. And this Red Bull VP had 4 or 5 people with him or something like that. And he was like, you need to have Red Bull on every other register. And I said, excuse me, sir, but you need to walk outside. And unless it says your fucking name on the front of the building, you need to take a lap and figure out how you're going to talk to me before you start telling me what I got to do with my retail space. And this guy was like, can we talk for a second? And kind of pulled me to the side. And I'm like, or you can tell your boss why there's, you know, 60 carts of Red Bull going out of date in the back room of this store and of the other 70 something stores that I work for. I'm like, so you can make that decision. And he was like, but it's one of that's the savagery that you get in the big box world, in a real corporate world where you can do stuff like that. Now I walk into the average brick and mortar retailer and I really am important to their business. I might not be as important to their business as I want to be, but I want to work to get there. And I also want, to find a way to where I can make them money and I can be an asset and I can add value. And the way to do that is to get them into a business conversation, whether they're comfortable with it or not, and make them comfortable with it by your demeanor and the way that you're approaching the situation. And that's what I hope my reps are doing. That's what I try to do. But I don't know if you have a different take.
Okay, go ahead, Mike, please.
You know, so to echo what Jared said, we talked about some of the challenges that I face in this industry, and I didn't want to go there, but since Jared took us there, we're going to go there. Most sales reps in the cigar industry, one of the hardest things to do for our business is to find great sales reps, right, Jared? I mean,
100%.
And by the way, one of Jared's sales reps at Christoph, I proactively called Jared and I said, listen, you got to hire this guy. Now, I hope that's working out, Jared, by the way.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
All right. But I said, listen, I'm just telling you that this is a guy you have to hire. Why would I do that? You know, because I know the guy. I know the character. I love Jared. I love Glenn. And I want nothing but success for them. And, you know, I know that it was between two or three guys. And I'm like, this is the guy they have to hire. I knew it. I knew it because I know. And by the way, and I'm not being completely philanthropic in that. He wasn't going to work for my brand anyway, even if I wanted him to.
And, no, because you need money to pay these guys.
Yeah, he's actually got to. Well, I have the money. I have the money. I just don't have the
right. It's an investment. Yeah. You've got to sell Endicott Steel, and then you can pay for a sales rep.
Right. I mean, you know, so Endicott Steel. So that's funny. So my point is that I will help Jared, and I know Jared would help me any way we can.
Because we have over the years.
And we have, right? And there are people, there are very few people in this industry that I wouldn't say that about. So most of the industry is like that. But I would say this. So, you know, you have this industry is a very difficult industry. Getting great sales reps is tough. Running the industry is tough. Partnering with retailers like Jared just described in his discussion is very tough. But we all care about our retailers. And we're always going to try to do whatever we can to help them out. But at the same time, they also have to reciprocate, which was what we talked about before, Will and Bear.
Yep.
Is that, you know, if we're going to do that, they also have to recognize that we're actually doing that. Like, I honestly don't really care. I do care, but I don't care a lot if a new retailer brings my cigars in. In fact, I've turned away retailers who have tried to order my cigars, like one in 10 years. But no, I've turned away some retailers because it just wasn't a good fit. I didn't have a sales rep in the area that I thought would do a good job. And if I put him in there, then the other retailers in the area might get a bad taste in their mouth because he tells them that it didn't work out. So I need to make sure that the situation is perfect. And whereas Jared's in a slightly different spot, not slightly different spot, but we have to make sure we're doing the right thing. And you know, when you have good people like Jared, you want to make sure that you help them out, and Jared feels the same way. And he's a good friend of mine, and there's nothing I wouldn't do to help him.
That's great. Bear, you had one more question, right?
No, they actually answered it. So
okay. Yeah. So guys, we did go a little late tonight. Jared, I want to thank you for joining. Mike, I want to thank you, of course, for being on the show as well. We really appreciate it. It was a nice night. We had to change gears a little, but I think it was a lot of fun.
Even though you set me up with those Patriots questions, Jared got them fucking wrong too.
Jared would
100%. 100%. I would have gotten them wrong.
That was the only
question.
Will Cooper, your version of, look at your glasses, Will Cooper. A guy like you comes up with excellent questions that Mike Bellady and soft brains like us just aren't capable of keeping up with.
Oh, come on.
The only one I would have gotten was the numbers retired, because Bruce Armstrong was my favorite player growing up. So I definitely would have been able to get at least two of those.
All right. But, no, that's great.
But, Mike, watching Mike Bellity with a big pile of poop in his pants was worth it.
All right. Hey, I just want to mention the schedule coming up on primetime. Thursday we have Luciano from Ace Prime is going to be making his debut on the Thursday show for primetime episode 132. The following week, primetime episode 133, that's going to be for April 9th. That's the 3-year anniversary show, and Pete Johnson is going to be the guest on that. And I also want to mention Primetime Jukebox will have a show on Monday, the 6th. I missed that, and that's going to be our album archaeology debut of a series, and then we're going to have the Let It Bleed album is going to be our featured album we're going to talk about. Bear, what do you got coming up?
Well, I'm pleased to announce that I just had our 113th take with Michael Herklotz of Nat Sherman, but my 104th take coming up on Sunday will actually feature someone that Jared is familiar with very much, and he's come up tonight. Mr. Glenn Case will be my guest on my 114th take on this coming Sunday. Yeah.
He never does stuff.
I have a way about me.
I love it. Glenn's an awesome, awesome interview. You guys are going to love it.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, I interviewed him a few years ago back on Stogie Geeks. It was a lot of fun.
We'll be talking about that.
I saved Glenn from falling on his face in Rhode Island once. But
I've done that probably 1,000 times.
Probably the same night I did it. But,
all right. But anyway, that...
The fuck is that? Oh, man.
All right. Anyway.
For the record, I just texted Jared something and he's reading it. But.
Who the fuck is that?
Oh my God!
You better call it, buddy.
Anyway, we're gonna end the show here. But no, we do thank Mike. Thank you very much. You're very generous.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And thanks for having Jared join, because he was all right.
He changed our whole show tonight. But it was we're a little unpredictable here on primetime, so in special edition, so we got to all right. We got a lot of people right now wanting to join these shows. So, but that's gonna wrap up primetime special edition number 71. This one's definitely in the annals of history. This is gonna go down bare on our memories when this goes down it goes down the annals of history for Tuesday, March 31st. Now, Wednesday, April 1st, April Fool's Day, how appropriate, on the East Coast. We'll see everybody Thursday night. Have a great night, everybody.
See you next time.